A regular man trims his chest hair. A man's man trims his chest hair with a chainsaw. A regular man teaches his kid how to ride a bicycle. A man's man teaches his kid how to do a wheelie on a dirt bike. A regular man celebrates Father's Day. A man's man celebrates Father's Day at the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. It's everything that makes men feel like men. Fast cars, loud noise, and enough horsepower to make your bones rattle. So don't spend Father's Day making an imprint on the couch. Get off your rear end and do something fun. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Tickets start at just $20 and $79 for the whole weekend. Order before June 7th and save. Get yours today at ThunderValleyChicks.com or call 423-BRISTOL.
WFORadio.com presents NHRA Nitro.
I'm Joe Costello, and this is WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. A weekly look inside the baddest motorsport in the world, NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing.
It's side by side, it's competition, and it's who wins, and then the chair of the crowd.
Join me as we go WFO with the stars of drag racing.
Hey, I'm Bob Tasca.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
Hey, this is Ron Kapp, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
NHRA track announcer Alan Reinhart stops by each week to break down each race and answer your email questions.
I mean, the Nitro cars put on a tremendous show. They're otherworldly machines. But for people that are really interested in cars, I mean, you wander through the superstock pits, and if you're wondering why you don't see 69 Camaros running around on the street anymore, it's because they're all out there in the stock and superstock pits.
Racing fans from around the globe, it's time to go WFO with Joe Costello.
WFO Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, following up the Mellow Yellow Series event at Englishtown Raceway Park, the Toyota Summer Nationals, and what a race it was. It had a little bit of everything, and you're going to hear the winners on this week's show. You are going to hear from the 100th different driver to win in Top Fuel, driver of the Geico Top Fuel Dragster, Richie Crampton, going to be on this show after his first victory. Crampton comes alive. Everybody's using that, so I'm going to throw it on this show as well, because it's true. Richie Crampton, now a winner in just his ninth event in the NHRA. Also on the show, funny car winner Cruz Pedregon wins from the number one qualifying position, sets the low elapsed time of the world with a 395.9 in qualifying, and wins from the number one qualifying position, takes the victory over Del Worsham in just an absolutely emotional final round. Cruz Pedregon going to be on this show. Also on the show, Pro Stock winner Jag Coughlin Jr. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke with Jag. Then we spoke with Alan. Now we're speaking with Jag. And it's obvious that the Mopar team has got something going on right now. Kind of a crazy first round. I want to know your thoughts. We'll talk about it. 10-second elapsed times winning Pedal Fest. It was out of control. We'll speak with Jag on this show just minutes from now. Stick around, Pro Stock fans. And the Pro Stock motorcycles. Uh-oh, Harley-Davidson domination, is it back? It looks like it is. 1-2 finishes in the last three races, going back to four wide. Andrew Hines going to be on this show to talk about it, so get ready and stick around. Also on the show, Bristol Dragway director Brandon Cross going to tell us about all the ticket specials for Thunder Valley that are going on special right now. But are scheduled to end. The deadline is coming. Get ready. Brandon Cross going to be on this show. So we've got a big thing going. We're going to talk E-Town. And we start them all off the same way with this man, the voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhart. Alan, welcome back.
Joe, great to be here, as always.
What an event that was. I had fun.
It was a wild one. There's no question about it. Just a unique set of circumstances, I guess, that all came together Friday night and Sunday as well. I don't think anybody that was there left going, well, that's just what I thought was going to happen. It was just crazy from top to bottom.
The Ron Capps number from a couple of years ago, the 396, that stood up for a long, long time. Now looking back, what an epic run that was to have been 2 years later before it was eclipsed.
Well, it's a classic case that, you know, conditions have to be just right in order for cars to be able to run that quickly, and you have to hit it just perfect. You know, we talked about it throughout the course of the weekend, there was not any room for error. If you were perfect, man, hang on. And if you weren't perfect, you weren't going anywhere. There wasn't any, gee, we missed it by a little bit, we ran 410. You know, you were either running 402 or 403, or you were smoking the tires or shaking the tires. And, you know, Cruz obviously hit it right on Friday night. I know he was a little disappointed that Saturday had the mechanical malfunction and wasn't able to try the backup in the Saturday evening qualifying run for the national record. And that, of course, sparked the debate all over again. Why do we have backups, and do we still need to have backups? You know, everybody's kind of got their own opinion on that. But
what is your opinion on that?
You know, I could make an argument either way. I think that I certainly understand why originally you had to back up a national record, because the timing systems that we were using at the time weren't as reliable, and flukes would happen now and then. I think with the CompuLink and with the technology that's come in, I don't think that it's necessary anymore. I don't think anybody that's there doubts Cruz went 395. And so let's see you do it again, which was the basis of needing a backup back in the day, I don't think is needed anymore. But the guys that make those decisions are in, you know, an office a couple of floors above mine, if you know what I'm saying.
With a big window in a corner.
Yeah, pretty much. I would not at all be opposed to somebody if the proposal was made. This is, look, from now on, you know, we can check the incremental numbers. We can look. We can verify that, you know, yes, that really was a good run. You know, obviously, if you have something hanging under the car, you have something dragged the beam, you know, you get a 60-foot time that's, you know, 0.5, well, you know that's not a good run. And so that those runs just get eliminated now anyway. So the need to show proof, you know, Cruz has the quickest time slip in history but doesn't have the national record, and that's kind of a strange, you know, strange thing. Well, I've made the quickest run ever. Oh, so you got the record. Well, no, I don't have the record. Well, did you make the quickest run? Yes. Well, why don't you have the record? And, you know, I don't know that discussion needs to happen anymore. I think we could probably do away with that.
It's certainly difficult and adds another layer of confusion to the first time or new fan.
The scariest thing that could have possibly happened a couple of years ago, and let me tell you, Bob Fry was very grateful that it all worked out the way that it did. Do you remember when Tony Schumacher made the run?
Yes.
Tony had not run quicker than the record. He had run quick enough to back up the record, but he had not run quicker than the national record. So it was possible for Tony to go so fast that he would win the race, make the quickest run in history, but outrun the backup, so to speak, and he would have lost the championship by not getting the record. Can you imagine trying to explain that to sponsors and fans?
He was too good. He was so great. He was so unbelievable, the best of all time, that he outperformed the rules and thus loses.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No. It would be a nightmare.
In order to win, you have to win the race, and you have to set the national record. Oh, you just made the quickest run in the history of the sport. Oh, but it was too quick, so it doesn't count, so you don't get the record. I mean, what a nightmare that would have been. And, you know, I guess I'm kind of the theory that it needs to be revisited. I'm sure there are some that could, you know, make arguments for the other side, and I'm certainly willing to listen, but I believe it's time to revisit that. And that is my opinion. That is not me speaking on behalf of the offices of Glendora.
There you go. I think that's the whole point of this show, and maybe we just started a conversation among some fans out there. Let's get into the Top Fuel round by round, and Richie Crampton, how about this guy? He is going to single-handedly increase the WFO radio listenership in Australia.
I think he probably already did. It was a great Cinderella story. That car's been performing well all year. They just haven't had anything to show for it. You know, there have been plenty of times when on Sunday, you know, they might be the third best, the fourth best car in first round. They just happened to be racing the guy that made the best run in first round. They couldn't get any Sunday luck. You know, everybody knows what that team's capable of. That team finished fourth last year with Morgan driving. And, you know, is Richie a rookie? Yes. Is he going to make some mistakes? Yes. Does he have some stuff to learn? Yes. But he's not the reason that the team hasn't performed better. They just haven't had any Sunday luck. And this Sunday, it kind of came together for him. He was finally in the right place at the right time. You know, qualifying number two shows you they had a very good car. And, you know, they got away with one in the semifinals against Langdon, but, you know, ran well in the first round, ran well, you know, throughout the day, so they deserved it. And as much as, you know, as much as Doug was probably the sentimental favorite, I don't think there were a whole lot of people that were too disappointed in the final round when Richie's light came on.
The Colettas were definitely the sentimental favorite. I mean, I can tell you, I'm always, for the most part, rooting for the best story, more often than not, because everyone seems very friendly and nice and open. And so I just kind of think about, wow, what would be a cool story here? And the Coletta story would have been a cool story. But if not the Coletta story, the Richie Crampton rookie winning and becoming the 100th Top Fuel racer to win, that is a great story. He staged up first round with a flat tire against Dom Lagana. That also took guts.
Yeah, we saw the tire shred, basically as he was crossing the finish line in the first round. I didn't realize until... did the interview with him later on in the day that the tire was flat. He was backing up from the burnout and noticed it was flat and said, gee, what do I do here? Well, if you shut the car off, you're done. So why not stage it? And, obviously he made the right choice. And for a guy that's pretty new behind the wheel, it seemed like a real veteran thing to do. You know, hey, I came to race. I came to win. I didn't come to shut my car off. I hope nobody points at that and tells me to. But I'm going to stage a car, and I'm going to try to beat that guy. And it worked out. So, good for him.
A lot of very strong performances. Doug Coletta and those guys, I know they wanted the win, but another very solid performance for the Mack Tool team.
I don't think there's any question they've got the best car. And, they keep final round. The one time in Gainesville when they punched through for the win. But they legitimately could have 5 national event wins right now. That car is that good. They certainly ran good enough to win this weekend. They've run good enough to win pretty much every weekend. I thought one of the most telling stats of the race was going into the final round that Richie Crampton is racing in his first final round ever. And Doug Coletta is racing in his 6th final round this year out of 8 races. I mean, that's just nuts. But, Richie got it done in the final. A great race. Both of them made very good runs, great race, and Richie got it done. So congratulations to him. That leaves that Traxxas shootout field is getting pretty full right now. It's going to be really interesting to see who sneaks into that next spot, because obviously there's only one left.
There you have it. Moving over to Funny Car, where Cruz Pedregon, as we said, 395.9, the low ET of the event. Best mile per hour was a track speed of Dell Worsham, 321.04. Cruz from the number one spot takes out Terry Haddock and then Tommy Johnson Jr., both in pedal fest situations there, just kind of getting there ahead of the other driver. True drag racing, really, as much as we talk about numbers, it's really about just getting to the finish line first, and he was doing it in the first 3 rounds, just kind of pedal fest, faked his way down there ahead of the other driver, Jack Beckman, in the semis. But then in the final round against Dell Worsham, who had taken out Robert Height, who had taken out Tim Wilkerson, who had taken out Tony Pedregon, Cruz puts up a 4:12, Dell puts up a 4:18, Cruz Pedregon is your winner.
Cruz made a point in the press room going into the final. He said, I don't care if I got outrun. I was not going to smoke the tires 4 straight runs on Sunday and really look like a dummy. The car obviously is making huge power right now. He gives a lot of credit to Alan Johnson, where he buys all of his engine components. And he has said more than once that my R&D program is named Alan Johnson. Alan fixes this stuff, figures it out, and then I get to put it on my car. But the car's just running so well. With the weather conditions that we had, a number of guys were having trouble getting them back down enough that they would get a bite of the track. When you think about the fact that Matt Hagen qualified, 12th or 13th, I think, and he ran 4:08. There was no middle ground. You were either running 4:0 or you were smoking the tires. And if you hit it, you were fast. If you didn't, you smoked them. Cruz, they just kept letting them get away with it the first 3 rounds. And then they finally backed it up enough to get a bite on the track. And, I'm sure that Dell's guys, Jono and Nicky, were looking at Cruz's numbers going, look, he hadn't been down the track yet. We've been down the track 2 out of 3 going into the final. Let's just make a run. If he Hail Marys us, he Hail Marys us. But I don't think they were trying to go out there and run, 4:05, 4:06, 4:07. I think they were going out there going, hey, look, he has not been down the track yet. Let's not smoke the tires and let him get away with another one. Go down the track. We should win this thing. They went down the track, and Cruz figured it out. So just one of those, I'm sure that they'd like to have that back, but if they're put in the same position again next week, I don't think they'd make a different decision.
Yeah, strategy call, because they were consistent. They smoked the tires first round and were able to get by Tony, but then they went a 16, a 17, and an 18 as it got hotter. So that was pretty much how they were performing on that given day. It was emotional, though, and I was very happy to hear Cruz in the winner's circle acknowledge and understand the emotional sub-story that was going on and give his trophy to Connie Coletta.
Yeah, that was a very nice gesture on his part. You know, obviously, you know, the Colettas annually have the big dinner where they basically feed most of the people in the pits on Saturday night of that race. And, you know, the friendship and respect off the track, you know, Cruz in the press room said, you know, nobody's been out here longer than Connie. Nobody's spent more money than Connie. Nobody loves the sport more than Connie. Nobody, and he knows how much this race means to him. And that's why he wanted to give him the trophy. And I just thought that was a very nice thing to do for on Cruz's part.
I agree, and we're going to hear from Cruz Pedregon and Richie Crampton coming up on this show just minutes from now. First-time listeners, if you're NHRA fans, you're in the right place. Now Pro Stock, Alan.
Actually, one last funny car note.
Yes.
The JFR cars weren't there.
First time, yes, the streak has come to an end. I'm glad you brought us back on that one. Now we have to take time to acknowledge the streak. 15 races?
Ever since Indy last year, at every event, there has been at least one John Force car in the final, sometimes two. And this week, when Dell outran Robert Hyatt in the semifinals, that brought an end to that streak. And, you know, the funny thing was, Elon Warner, who is the ace PR guy for John Force Racing, was really bummed. And it's like, dude, it couldn't go on forever. I mean, 15 in a row, come on, really? But you know, you just always hate to see a streak like that end. When you're riding a wave, you hate when you get bumped off of it. So it'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back. You know, we've only got a week off, and then we got four in a row. So Cruz has been to the last two finals. You know, if he can continue that hot streak, he's going to make a real run at it. You know, he wasn't in the top 10 in points all year long, and then the last two final rounds, and all of a sudden everybody's going, okay, you know, you'll have to put that Snap-on guy back in championship conversations all over again. And it'll just be interesting to see what happens. You know, John's had some rough luck. John Force has been out early the last couple of weeks, even though he's had a pretty good car. Robert's still the standard bearer and funny car as far as overall. But the 13th qualifier went 408. It's really tough to look at that shark tank and go, okay, well, I know who's going to win this race going into Sunday.
Semifinals, a Pedregon, a DSR car, a Coletta car, a Force car. That's cool.
That's it. I mean, you know, bring your best and let's see what you got. It was just, it's been such a fun race. You know, it's the amazing thing about it, other than the JFR final round streak and the fact that, you know, I mentioned on the PA that they've been trophy hogs. Going into Englishtown, we had run eight races and six of the trophies have gone home with John Force Racing, two of them with Alexis, and nobody else had any of them. You know, now Cruz finally breaks that stranglehold, but the DSR funny cars are really kind of in a slump right now from top to bottom. You know, Matt Hagen was in the final round of Pomona, and I don't believe there's been a DSR car in the finals since. So it's been a tough year for them. That might be wrong, but, you know, normally we're used to looking at those guys and going, well, they got a chance to double, they got a chance to double, they got a chance to double, and their top fuel cars are definitely holding up their end of the equation, but the funny cars have been struggling a bit.
Absolutely. We'll get into it. Beckman's car started to attain some consistency, which we will see if that continues. Pro Stock, this is a class that I really want to get into because there's a lot to unpack. Obviously, the 646.4 quickest ever and national record for Erica Ender-Stevens, and top speed of the meet, fastest ever and national record for Erica Ender-Stevens, 215.55, crossing that milestone. Now we're closer to 220 than we are to 210, so to speak. That is just amazing. She told me she was happy to be qualified second because the number one spot has been, in a way, jinxed. I think you gave that stat over the PA over the weekend. But in the end, it was Greg and Jeg and the two best guys that we have out there right now in terms of numbers, with Jeg Coughlin coming out on top.
Well, Greg is certainly looking like he's getting back in form. Not quite to where he wants to be, obviously, but starting to knock down some rounds, and that's what it's going to take if he wants to fight his way into the countdown to the championship. So, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see if he can keep building on that. Jeg Coughlin is amazing. I mean, you know, when Dave Conley changed lanes on him, and I think it was the semifinals, and I asked him about it in the press room, I said, were you surprised? He said, I was stunned. But they just watched Brogdon go wacky in that lane and went, all right, you know what, we're not taking any chances. So, but I think Jake could win on the return road in a rental car. He just, whatever it is, he's got it. Finds a way to win. Finds a way to turn on the win light. When he's got the best car, he doesn't make any mistakes. When he doesn't have the best car, sometimes it's good fortune. Sometimes maybe it's intimidation. You know, he said in the press room going into the final round, he said, well, we set up for between an 05 and a 15 reaction time. And I went, you what? I mean, you hear that bracket racing all the time. But in pro stock? And he said, that's something that they've consciously worked on. He said, they go up and look, and if we've got a performance advantage, we'll set up to be, you know, 30 and, you know, just not make any mistakes and go down the track. And if we're looking at somebody that, you know, looks like maybe has a performance advantage or we think we need some help, he says, we will change the car, and they can just about pick a reaction time like you could bracket racing. I mean, obviously, every once in a while you're going to miss it. But I was very surprised, and he was said yeah, they had a lot of little things they could do to the car to change it 100th here, 100th there. And, you know, you don't set up to go 00 every time, just like in bracket racing. You know, if you set up to go 00 every time, you're going to be red once in a while because you're going to miss now and then. So if you feel like you've got a performance advantage, you can ease off a little bit. If you feel like, hey, we need everything we got, you make the adjustments and go for it. And what they're doing right now is just flat winning. They're performing well, not spectacularly, but well, but they're winning. And obviously that's the most important part of the equation.
The first round in Pro Stock was very interesting because it was a series of pedal fests and just struggling to get down the racetrack. Jag running in the 10s, beating Kenny Delco, just craziness. Dave Connolly and Vincent Nobile in a very close pedal fest race. And then Erica comes up and rips off a 6:40, 6:4. Where I'm going with this is that I really think the fans liked it. They were cheering. It was unpredictability. They didn't know what was going on. There were upsets. They really liked the fact that the pro stockers were not efficient machines going from start to finish perfectly.
I think it was a classic case of uncharted territory. Everybody in pro stock that's been out there a while, you know, the Summit cars, the AJ cars, the, you know, obviously the Gray cars, the V-Gains, everybody that's out there on a regular basis has got a very thick notebook that they can go to. And if you spend enough time in the pits, you'll be surprised that, you know, you'll be talking to a guy in Seattle, and he'll be looking at his notes from Reading 2006 because conditions matched up. This is what we did there. We were fast. This is what we do here that we think we can get away with. The pro stock cars make horsepower based on whatever the atmospheric conditions are. That's the bottom line. And the barometer was off the charts high. Humidity was low. Temperature was cool. Everything you could have for perfect conditions weather-wise for a pro stock car to make power. Normally, when we have those conditions, it's overcast, it's cool, the racetrack will be 75, 80 degrees, and you have a combination for that. Well, in Englishtown, with not a cloud in the sky, even though the air temperature wasn't bad at all, the track temperature was over 110. I think it got somewhere in the mid-120s during the course of the day. And nobody had a note for how do we deal with all this power with this hot a racetrack, because the cars are literally that finicky. You know, if you hit it right, which obviously the elite folks did, I think Jason made a good run, I think Greg made a good run, if you hit it right, it was possible, obviously, to make the quickest run in the history of the sport. But just like we were talking about with the nitro cars, you had no room for error. If you were 200 high on the RPM leaving the starting line, or if you were 2 points of gear off with what you needed to have in the transmission, it would blow the tires off of it. And that's what we saw. And then it's a matter of, okay, who can make this thing recover and maybe get it down there? But it was wildly entertaining, I thought, from a spectator standpoint. It certainly is hard on equipment. And it makes engine builders cringe when they hear them banging off the rev limiter out there in low gear. But it was certainly wildly entertaining to watch, and I enjoyed watching it. And then, you know, obviously after a couple of runs, guys were starting to get a handle on it, and the performance came back a little bit.
And I say we raise the wheelie bars up to a mandatory 6 inches. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be a difficult thing to do in those cars. You know, you'd have to do a little more revamping than just the wheelie bar in that state. But it was just fun because, like I said, it wasn't – you couldn't just look at it and go, okay, well, this is going to be a walkover. We know who's going to win this. We know – you know, you certainly couldn't look forward to the semis to see who was going to be there. You couldn't look forward past the next pair because you just didn't know what was going to happen.
excuse me.
Did Jake use the flying by the semis line when you spoke to him?
I don't know.
He brought up in the press room that brought back some memories back when his dad was a big part of the Pro Stock team, and his dad is a very knowledgeable guy, Jake Sr., with Pro Stock machines. He's been around forever and ever and ever. And he said it was kind of a running deal with them when they were struggling a little bit. They'd come back, and his dad would say, look, don't worry about it. Just keep turning on the scoreboard. We'll have you flying by the time we get to the semis. And that's basically what they did. They struggled the first couple of runs, and he said that came up in the pits. He said, hey, don't worry about it. You just get the scoreboard to turn on somehow, and we'll have you flying by the time you get to the semis. And he got to the semis, the car was fast, and he went ahead and closed the deal.
In Pro Stock Motorcycle, they're back. The Harley-Davidsons qualified 1 and 3, went on to win and runner-up for the third straight Pro Stock Motorcycle race. Low ET and best mile per hour, Andrew Hines is your winner.
You know, I think everybody knew they were going to get back at some point. You know, the Vance and Hines team is just too good. You give them time. They have the resources. They obviously have the brain power. And, you know, it took them the better part of a year. But, you know, they were starting to show signs at the end of last season and then having another off season to work on the stuff. And now, you know, the 3 or 4 months, the motorcycles start off so slowly with, you know, you don't go to a race until Gainesville. Then you've got a couple of weeks off before the next one. And so you get an opportunity to go out, basically test, even though you're racing, and go, okay, we have an area that we need to improve. Well, we've got 3 weeks. It's not like, you know, okay, well, geez, put it all in the trailer and we'll take it to Houston and see what happens next. So that really favors the Harley guys just because they were working, they were going forward, they needed to get out and test, see where they were compared to everybody, see where their weak points were, and then they had the time to go back and rework on those. You know, I think everybody expected them to get back to this point at some point, and now it's just going to be a matter of, is there anybody out there that can keep up with them? You know, the Hectors made some good runs. Matt Smith's motorcycles made some good runs. But on a consistency basis, the Harleys look like right now they're right back to where they were. And since they're running with the same rules package that everybody else is, you know, those guys, you know, have an unfair advantage because of XYZ, that's a tough argument to make right now because they're running the same rules package.
Yeah, very, very crazy how they have been able to work so themselves back up to front. It shows you that these guys are bad. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you know, the Vance and Hines name is so synonymous with success in motorcycles no matter where you race motorcycles. You know, they've done it on the road courses. They've done it on the drag strips. They've done it just everywhere you can run motorcycles, they've done it. They've done superbike stuff. It's ridiculous. And you give them time. If you told them, okay, you guys are going to have to run a Cushman scooter, they wouldn't be dominant tomorrow. But given some time, they would come out and they would find a way to win with it. That's just what they do.
I also think that they are the factory in many ways. I expect them to be able to do this. I know it's talking about it, expecting it, and doing it are two different things. But I really, I made this analogy in the past a couple of years ago, like a Formula One team building everything from scratch, from start, designing it, building everything, as opposed to buying parts from someone else and bolting them together. They just have an inherent factory advantage. They are the factory, it seems.
That's certainly true. And, you know, what they do as far as cylinder head stuff, what they do, I have no idea. You know, the S&S bikes, though, they basically started from scratch, too, when George got together, George Smith and George Bryce, and started making the Buells. There are guys now that are buying a lot of parts from them, but you can buy them in a very workable condition, if that makes sense. You're not buying the finished product. You're buying a piece that, you know, you're going to finish. You're going to whittle on yourself. And I know a lot of the bike guys have gotten Pro Stock influence. You know, you look at a Pro Stock motorcycle. A V-twin Pro Stock motorcycle is 2 60-inch cylinders. It's, you know, part of almost a Pro Mod motor or Pro Stock motor. And, you know, Larry Morgan has helped the Hectors out, because he understands how you make big cylinders work. Larry normally works with 8 of them as opposed to 2, but when you're working on a port and cylinder head, it doesn't know how many brothers and sisters it has. It just knows airflow. And so I believe Sonny has helped Matt Smith with some of his stuff. There have been a lot of a lot of outside influence coming in, which has really helped the performance of those things. And the Vance and Hines guys really believe that the most potential is still in the Suzuki. You know, they've gotten some different rules over the last couple of years, and there's still some R&D being done there. And since the Vance and Hines guys build a lot of those Suzuki motors, they certainly know, you know, how much power there is, how much potential there is. So there's still some room for improvement with everybody. It'll just be a matter of seeing who figures it out and who can get back in the game the quickest, I think.
Jimmy Underdahl and Steve Johnson carrying that flag. Hey, Jimmy was fast, and Matt was pretty fast, and they're just going to keep on working on it. But it was an entertaining race. It was a lot of fun. And I expect that the Buells will be back soon enough. Nothing stays the same, but it is certainly very entertaining right now. Alan, great job as usual. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to double back on? Pro Modified was pretty cool. Von Smith winning, Scotty Richardson in Comp Eliminator, James Fontana in Super Stock, Katie Sipanek in Stock, Stephen Logan in Super Comp, John Olson in Super Gas, and Val DiGenova. That was kind of a cool story. His first win, 1987 in Montreal.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And this was his second.
Same as John Force. They had the same first win.
That's it. John Force's first win was Montreal 1987. He's won a few more since then. But, Val just took his time sneaking back to the winner's circle. I think probably the biggest story come out of there was, out of the sportsman stuff, is probably Scotty Richardson. Good car, good equipment, obviously a good driver. It's very early in the season, but he has got a lot of points up on the board. You know, two national wins already under his belt. It's way too early to start getting him fitted for the crown, but, you look at what he's been doing with that thing, and Vinny Barone is a whatever-it-takes kind of guy. You know, if it takes more money, he'll spend it. If it takes more effort, he'll do it. And with Scotty's driving abilities, I think that somebody's going to have to really work hard to catch them in the championship hunt. There's certainly guys that have the potential to do it, but it'll be interesting to see as we go down the road. I think at the end of the year, this race and Comp Eliminator will be one that they're still talking about when it comes to time to crown the champion.
Yeah, DeEcano Altered's in the final. Very cool seeing Vinny Barone with that giant smile on his face right after reading all about him in the National Dragster. They did a great piece on him, and then he's out there every round and wins the thing with Scotty. That is kind of cool.
He's a very passionate guy. You know, he's got fast cars. Like I said, got plenty of budget. And, when you've got Anthony Bertozzi and Scotty Richardson are your two drivers, that's certainly not going to be the weak part of the team. So they expect to go out and do well, and right now they're doing it.
Excellent. Alan, great job as usual. Next race, the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals in Bristol. We've got the weekend not racing, and then next week I will be there in Bristol. I hear a whole mess of WFO radio listeners, I don't know if they're a mess, just a bunch, are coming out to the 14th annual, and it's going to be a lot of fun there on Father's Day weekend in Thunder Valley.
It's a terrific venue. It's a great event. It's a Bruton Smith track, so you know that everything's going to be first class. And Brandon and his staff out there are just amazing. They go way out of their way to provide a family and fan-friendly atmosphere. And as you mentioned, Father's Day, so come on out and join us. If you're in the neighborhood of Yellowstone Raceway in Billings, Montana, I will be up there on Saturday, one of my ESPN Sportsman Spotlight track visits. So if you're in the Division 6 neighborhood, you're going to be anywhere near Yellowstone and Billings, come on out and say hi.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Alan, great job as usual. Thank you so much.
All right, Joe. We'll talk to you soon.
The NHRA's Alan Reinhardt joins us each week right here on WFO Radio. And if you're a first-time listener, well, you did the right thing downloading the show or listening on Stitcher, on the WFO app, or on TuneIn, or on... We got a WFO Radio group on Facebook that WFO Radio listeners are on there kind of sharing how they listen to the show. I ask the question, and there's a million different ways to listen to WFO Radio. If you've got an internet connection, either through your phone, your device, or however, you can hear the program. Now the challenge is letting the world know about it, and that's what we are doing, and a lot of our listeners are doing every week, and I thank you for it. And we're going to do a great show for you this week. We have got Richie Crampton, a first-time winner, the 100th different winner in Top Fuel history, driver of the Morgan Lucas Racing Geico Top Fuel Dragster. We're going to hear from Richie just a couple minutes from now. Also on the show, Cruz Pedregon, the Cruiser. I've got a bunch of great questions for Cruz about his win. The quickest funny car racer in the history of funny car racers with that 395.9. Moved it down 100th from the 396 that Caps had run. The quickest ever. Just absolutely awesome. And he goes on from the number one qualifying position to win the race. Cruiser going to be on this show just minutes from now. Stick around. also on the show, Jed Coughlin and Andrew Hines. So we've got it loaded up. Not to mention Brandon Cross from Bristol Dragway, going to tell us all about the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals and some ticket specials that will be expiring soon. You can click the link on the front page of WFO Radio and get to the ticket office. I will be there, and we are going to have some WFO Radio listeners there, and it should be a lot of fun. So get in and get ready. We've got a great show. My goal is that you gobble up about 2 hours of your work week with this program. Get your earbud in, you're working, you're looking like you're working, you're listening to the show while you do other things, multitasking. That is why we do it. A little drag racing entertainment during the week when the race is not on. That is why we do it. And I like to think we do a pretty good job. And from the feedback we have been getting at WFO Radio and the Facebook page and the emails I've been receiving and the self-addressed stamp envelopes in our P.O. box, things are going good out there. So thank you to all you people out there. Now, I want to tell you about Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, because as much as I like talking about drag racing and these fast cars, I like seeing people get the experience. And Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School is a great place to do that. You hear us talking about it, but you can also call them 866-480-7223. They've got a program called the Dragster Adventure. I was actually speaking with a couple of WFO listeners that are going to do the Dragster Adventure upcoming. They're going to be in Fontana, California on June 13th. They're also going to be in St. Louis, Missouri on July 5th. And you can go to the website and check out a full list of dates for all the Hawley School programs that they have, whether it be Super Gas or Super Comp License. Go to the website. Click around, frankhawley.com. But here's the bottom line. The bottom line. It is an experience you will carry with you for the rest of your life. Every time you see these cars launch, you will have a reference point. It will make the appreciation of the sport much greater, because you will be side-by-side racing. You're not riding along with an instructor or strapped into a vehicle you cannot control. You will be controlling it. You will be driving it. You will be in control. And that is a rare opportunity that Frank Hawley is giving you. So give him a call, 866-480-7223. Birthday gift, anniversary gift, holiday gift, graduation gift, life experience gift, retirement gift. It's something that I have had the experience, not with Frank Hawley, but in general, and I can tell you, you will enjoy it. Acceleration like you cannot believe, and there is no roller coaster or theme park ride or thrill jump that's going to give you this feeling that you will get by driving a dragster. Check out frankhawley.com for more information, or call 866-480-7223 for Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School at frankhawley.com.
This is WFO Radio.
On Valentine's Day, he took his wife to that expensive, fancy restaurant. On Halloween, he took the kids around the neighborhood to ask strangers for candy. So this Father's Day weekend, let's do what Dad wants to do. Go to the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. 10,000 horsepower, 300 miles an hour, and nitro pumping power that'll make your bones rattle. See drag racing's biggest stars like John Force and his daughters Courtney and Brittany make this the best Father's Day ever. Start a new Father's Day weekend tradition at the Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals. Tickets start at just $20, $79 for the entire weekend. Plus, save on tickets and get your kids' tickets free if you order before June 7th. Just call 423-Bristol or go online to ThunderValleyTix.com.
Red Line Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in
Redline Motor Oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine, published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
The 46th Toyota Summer National at Englishtown Raceway Park. What a race, top to bottom, start to finish. It was spectacular. And if you are a new listener to WFO Radio, you're going to hear the winners. So make sure you subscribe, download the app, and get logged on to our Facebook and Twitter account, because you are going to hear the winners on this show. And we're going to start it off with a first-time winner who also happens to be the 100th different Top Fuel winner in NHRA history, driver of the Geico Top Fuel Dragster. He joins us now, Richie Crampton. Richie, welcome to WFO.
Hey, Jerry, thanks for having me on your show.
First time as a winner. You earned your way on this week. Congratulations. You win this race. You're the 100th different winner in Top Fuel. That is huge.
It is. It's huge for MLR. It's huge for Geico and Toyota at their race there in Englishtown. And I couldn't be prouder to be number 100 on that list of great Top Fuel drivers. I mean, I just think about all the guys on that list, and for me to stake my claim at a, you know, kind of iconic spot on that list at number 100, it's a very special feeling. It's truly a dream come true.
I can't help but think of all the different things that are going on in your life right now. You're a rookie driver, but just getting the opportunity to be in the NHRA as a driver, period, has got to just make you feel great. And then to get your first win, just as you've got a new member of the family entering the world, like so much going on, and it's all seems to be great things.
Yeah, you said it. I really don't know how I got to be so lucky, you know. A lot of great things going on in my life right now, and, you know, just truly honored to get to drive a Top Fuel dragster for Morgan Lucas Racing, and, you know, having our, what we're calling our baby Emma, our ultimate good luck charm at home now. So things are going good at home, and things are going great at work, and we just would like to, you know, try and keep this ball rolling. It's still surreal. I don't think it's really set in yet that I've actually won a Top Fuel event. But, you know, we'll gather up our thoughts here over the course of this week and get ready for Bristol and try and do it again.
Very solid performances throughout the day, beating drivers that, frankly, are very, very tough. You went through the Mellow Yellow Champion. Let's talk about you round by round. But first, well, I'll save that. Let's start about, we're talking about your round by round. First round, you're the number two qualifier. You ran an excellent 3.75 in qualifying, but Doug Coletta was able to best his number one at that point and take it back from you. But the machine was running very well from the outset.
Yeah, it was. You know, I think a lot of that can be accounted to the fact that we had two good race cars competing there this past weekend with Morgan Lucas in his car back out racing again, and we're able to feed off the data that we got from his car because the cars are identical, and it paid dividends in qualifying. You know, Aaron Brooks was basically running both cars, you know, helping Jeff Edwards and Morgan tune that car, and you know, whatever Morgan's car would do, Aaron would come back and adjust ours, and then, like you said, we ran that 375 in Q4 in that right lane that everyone was a little skeptical about, given that they had to do some repairs to it earlier in the weekend and stuff, and I think at that point, everyone here on the Geico team realized that we had a pretty good hot rod for this weekend, and it could possibly be a great race day for us on Sunday, which it was.
First round, you take down the local favorite, Dom Logano, who put up a 390 in a solid race, but your 377 was just too much. And then the second round, I'm walking out getting ready for it, and I got out there a little too early. And so I decide to hang out under the tower, and I'm standing next to this gentleman. We start speaking, and he's got an Australian accent. And I was like, "You related to Richie?" And he's like, "Yes, I'm his father." And so now I'm having a great conversation with your dad, and it was very nice meeting him, by the way. And he is just so proud of you and the whole situation, being here and taking this in. The fact that you're from Australia and having your father here, he doesn't always live here. It just is a timing thing. Your win could have come when he wasn't here, but it came with him here. But I got to tell you, he goes, "Man, second round is going to be tough. J.R. Todd is tough." And so he was a little bit worried. You got by J.R., and at that point you had to think, wow, this could be the day.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was, just to touch on that, it was awesome to have my dad on hand to be there when we did well and, you know, obviously won. But, you know, that first round was tough. I had a flat right front tire when I backed up after the burnout and, you know, it was kind of my decision whether to hit the throttle or not. And I kind of figured I'd drive it as far as I could before that tire came apart. And, luckily it made it all the way to the finish line and we were able to run that 377 and beat Dom. Who's, you know, the Logano family are awesome. You know, they were the first guys over there trying to get a front wheel back on our car so we could tow it back and get it serviced for the second round. And then, of course, in the second round, you know, duking it out with J.R. Todd. We all know how good of a driver he is and how well them Coletta cars are running right now. So we know we would have had a heck of a race on our hands. And, you know, we kind of did. Both cars smoked the tires. He left on me pretty good, so... kind of got lucky there, you know, and fortunately we're able to get around him. We're all duking it out down there in, you know, around 8, 9, 10 in points right now. So it was good to get by him and, you know, go on to the third round and try and race my buddy Shorten Langdon, the champ.
Yeah, absolutely. That front tire going out, that was pretty wild. At what point did you notice, like backing up from the burnout, hey, this thing is flat? Was it slowly going flat, and take me through the decision to stomp the gas?
Well, you know, it did the burnout fine, and then I stopped and put it in reverse and started backing up, and the steering kind of felt a little heavy, which led my eyes to kind of start looking at the front tires and stuff, and sure enough, backing up, that tire was dead flat. So I was kind of pointing at it to my crew guy, and he acknowledged that, you know, there might be something wrong there, and coincidentally, there was someone on the racetrack down course. So when Aaron Brooks saw me pointing the head at the tire, he thought I was pointing at one of the NHRA officials on the track or something. And, you know, fortunately, I think if they would have seen it, they probably would have told me to shut it off right there and then. But ultimately, the decision was in my hands to stage the thing and, like I said, hit the throttle and drive it as far as we could until it, you know, become too hard to drive. But, it's pretty amazing that it held on as long as it did, and just, you know, that was a super lucky round to get that win.
And gutsy, too, which I think everybody likes. I think you just earned a couple of fans right there because people love that attitude about it. And the semifinal matchup against Sean, obviously, he's the reigning Mellow Yellow champ. Alan Johnson, Alanabi, huge, huge matchup. And you're beating these guys pedaling the car. You went 412 at 293 on a very tricky racetrack, and you were able to beat the champ going to the final round against Doug Coletta, who has been just so tough. Talk about beating Sean.
Yeah, well, racing up against Alan Johnson, the whole Alan Arby Racing organization, and Shorten Langdon, it's pretty intimidating. So it was kind of hard to, you know, block that out. I've raced him in the past, but never in the semifinal, of course. So didn't try to overthink things too much. And he obviously had a lot of trouble on the starting line. I think he blew the tires off basically instantly. And we had a cylinder out at the step, which I think just being down on power, running on seven cylinders, allowed us to get a little farther down the racetrack. And our race car was kind of starting to get a little weak and shake the tires out there about 60 or 80 feet. So I pedaled at once. I'm not sure if it actually needed it or not, but, you know, it just felt so weird and it wasn't going anywhere that I decided to get out of the throttle once and get back in it. And fortunately, it stayed hooked up and we ran it through to the finish line and got the round win. But definitely always a good thing when you can line up against Alan Harvey and get the round win. We all know they set the standard for Top Fuel anymore, and they're tough competitors.
I'm going to go somewhere. The word intimidation, it gets used a lot. But looking at the numbers from this win and thinking about it, the fact that you guys were so strong in qualifying, putting up just massive numbers, do you think that sent a message to the opposing crew chiefs? Like, hey, we're going to have to step on it to beat these guys. We can't just get down through there, which then turned into tire smoke and enabled you guys to get through these rounds. It sure looks like everyone was taking you extremely seriously going into the final round, and that turned into victories.
Yeah, well, you know, drag racing is kind of a bit of a chess game when you start looking at what their competitors are running. And, you know, if you start trying to think about beating one another based upon, you know, what you think the other guy's going to run, you can run into trouble. But I don't think much of it's being too concerned about what I'm doing, but more about what Aaron Brooks does. We know how good of a crew chief he is and how good he is at tuning these Top Fuel dragsters. And I think all the crew chiefs in the pit area knew that, you know, Aaron was having one of his good weekends like we see from time to time. And, you know, whoever we were running against better try and run as good as Aaron. So, you know, hats off to him and the Geico team. You know, they put together a great race car, and Aaron Brooks is just the man right now, in my opinion. And it was great to just keep running good all weekend long.
Richie Crampton with us, driver of the Geico Top Fuel Dragster, winner at Englishtown, the 100th different winner in Top Fuel. You got to go up against Doug Coletta in the final round. There's a whole lot going on there because Doug has been so strong. He was the number one qualifier, and top to bottom has really been the car to beat in 2014. A lot of emotions going on there. They had two Coletta cars in the final round. You're looking at your first chance to like really bring home a Wally in a very significant place. Tell me about your prep for the final round, and what were you thinking as you were getting ready to race?
You know, honestly, I just tried to go up there make out that like it was another qualifying run, like not worry too much about who's in the other lane and just do my thing and make another run. And with that confidence of what Aaron Brooks had up his sleeve, I knew we could run good and at least contend for the race win. I know how much the Englishtown race means to the Coletta family, and rightfully so, you know, losing Scott there 5 years ago. And, you know, I knew they were going to be tough, and it would have been a well-deserved win for them again, because, like you said, they have the baddest hot rod in the pit area right now this season. So it was pretty intimidating, because I used to watch Doug Coletta race on TV when I was a teenager back in Australia. So to line up and race against him definitely had my mind running a little bit, and had my heart pumping. But like I said, hats off to Aaron Brooks. He gave us a great race car that was able to get around that Coletta juggernaut.
9 thousandths of a second at the stripe. Coletta had you a little bit off the reaction time. You were a little bit better in ET, 381.9 to a 384.8. And you were the winner. The light comes on. Just 9 events it takes to get your first win. And just like that, Morgan said it on the television show, you're now a member of the club. When the light came on and you realized, hey, I won this thing, tell me about those moments.
Oh, man. I probably run that thing to almost a quarter mile there. You know, I drove it way past the finish line because I was like, I couldn't see him out in front of us. So I drove that thing a little too far just trying to make sure that we got there. And after we got past the finish line, I was just staring at that wind light on my wall over there in the left lane. And when that wind light lit up, man, I started clapping my hands and yelling in my helmet. And it was just a great feeling. You know, it's something I've dreamed about, wanting to drag race my whole life and finally getting opportunity to race and compete with people like Doug Coletta, to come home with my first Wally, I just knew it was going to be a great day and a great afternoon for everyone at MLR from that point on.
Well, it was tremendous to be there. You are now ninth in the points standings, and of course the countdown is a very, very important. Top Fuel Eliminator is so tough out there. And Richie, you know, we've been trying to figure out ways how to increase our WFO radio listenership in Australia. I think this might be a good way. What do you think?
I think so, yeah. You know, I have so much great support from the fans in Australia that they're kind of keeping an eye on what's going on over here in the NHRA, as always. And I'm sure, you know, they'll be listening to every possible thing that's got my name in it from this point onward. And, you know, drag racing fans in Australia are awesome. They're diehard, and I'm pretty proud to be from there and, you know, getting a Wally. I'm the second Australian to win a Top Fuel national event, so that's a great feeling, and I really thank everyone in Australia for their support.
I know it's very tough because they're on the opposite side of the clock, and it's just, you know, it's down under. But let's assume that all your Australian fans are listening to WFO radio right now, and you have an opportunity to talk directly to the people that supported you and you grew up with, and they are listening to this show at this point. If you have a message for them directly, by all means, have at it. Speak away.
Well, you know, hi to everyone I used to race with back over there, and everyone that helped me along the way to learn how to go drag racing with my old car, and even when I started being a crew member on Top Fuel Dragsters in Australia. You know, there's so many great people that have helped me along the way, and you know, thank you so much for the support back then and even to this day. You know, I know there's a lot of people behind me in Australia, and I appreciate every single one of them. It's been a great story for me to race over there and then make my way over here to the States and get to where I'm at.
I love the fact that drag racing, and really, your dad said it, if it's got a steering wheel, we love it in Australia. That's what he told me exactly, and that seems to be true. I think it is great that drag racing is spreading around the globe, and I guess the second most popular place is Australia. So very cool that you were able to come into the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series, get your first win in just 9 events, become something that history will remember, the 100th ever different winner in Top Fuel, and I'm very happy to see that. What do you think of the headline, Crampton Comes Alive? First of all, the first question is, do you get the joke? Crampton comes alive.
Oh, absolutely. Peter Frampton comes alive. Yeah, you know, that popped up quite a while ago. We got some running jokes here at the shop where we like to Photoshop other people's faces onto particular things. And Aaron Brooks actually put my face on the Peter Frampton Comes Alive album cover picture quite a while ago. So that's been kicking around the shop, and I like it. I'll take it. It's a pretty funny picture, too, by the way. But that just goes to show how much fun we have here at MLR. And, you know, it's just a great place to race. And these are some of my best friends, and we have a lot of fun.
For our listeners out there, do you have a Twitter account? Do you do some tweeting and social media stuff if they want to follow you?
Absolutely, yeah. You can follow me at RichieCrampton.com and on Facebook at Richie Crampton, Top Fuel Pilot. And follow the team's website, you know, go online to MorganLucasRacing.com, and, you know, anything that we can do with the social media side of things. We love interacting with the fans and talking about stuff and trying to joke around a little bit here and there, so it's a lot of good fun. So at Richie Crampton on Twitter, get on there, and it's great to hear from some people.
That is super cool. Next race, Bristol, Thunder Valley, got a weekend off, but then headed down to Thunder Valley, a very unique place. We have been enticing our friends and fans to go out there and check it out on Father's Day weekend. Always a great race. First time racing there for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful part of the country and a great historic racetrack for us to go compete at. So I'm very excited to get down to Thunder Valley and go make some runs. And, you know, hopefully we can keep the ball rolling with the way the car's running right now and go some rounds, because definitely if there's one of the races I'd like to go some rounds at again, it would be Bristol. I love that track, and I love the people, and the fans in that area are awesome. So it's going to be great. I don't think our little baby Emma is going to be joining me for Father's Day, my first Father's Day down there, because she's still a little young, but you know, nonetheless, I'll be in constant contact with Stephanie and Emma during the weekend, and I'm sure she'll bring me some more luck.
And your dad is going to be there, correct, before he heads back?
Yeah, well, that's funny. Both of my parents are actually here in the States visiting. They've been here since Stephanie and I had Emma. And so my mom, she actually stayed in Indianapolis with Stephanie and Emma while my dad went to Bristol. So my mom kind of missed out on the celebrations, in Englishtown. So she'll come to Bristol with my dad, next race, and hopefully she can get to enjoy a bit of the winning side of things as well.
As the defending race winner, won't that be cool? Richie, thank you so much for coming on WFO Radio and giving us the behind the scenes of your big first win. It is always great speaking with a first-time winner, but I have a feeling it won't be long till you are back again, and we'll be looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Pleasure as always.
Richie Crampton with us here on WFO Radio. Crampton comes alive. Everyone's going with it, and I like it too. I want to see that picture of the album cover with Richie's mug on there. Will be very, very cool. And all you folks listening down under in Australia, we do this show every week. We have all the Mellow Yellow Series winners on every week. If you want to stay connected with the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series and much of the Lucas Oil stuff, subscribe to the show on iTunes or download the mobile application for Apple or for Android. Either works, the iPhone, the iPad, the Android. We can get us on Stitcher. You can get us on TuneIn. There's a lot of different ways. We would love to have more people down under. We've already received two envelopes from down there with people requesting stickers. So very, very cool. Looking forward to it. And hopefully you will check in each week. And I know Richie is going to be back. That guy has got what it takes, especially after that staging it up with a flat tire and mashing the gas. That's guts, baby. I like it. And I met his father, and his dad was super cool. And when I was talking to his dad, I was like, wow, there's a little magic going on here. And very interesting. Congratulations on the win. We've got more to come, though. Jed Coughlin going to join us on the show. Andrew Hines going to join us on the show. And Brandon Cross is going to be our guest. He is the director of Bristol Dragway. We're going to talk about tickets and specials and things that are going on out there at Thunder Valley. And you can get special ticket prices before the deadline by clicking on the banner ad on WFOradio.com. We've got all that to come. But first, I want to tell you about our new sponsor that joined us just a couple of weeks ago, Rodak Coffee and Barbecue Grills. Open a browser, check them out. Rodak is spelled R-O-D-A-K-S. Rodak Coffee and Grills.com. And they are located in Fort Worth, Texas. He's a big drag racing fan, but also an award-winning barbecue rub maker and coffee roaster. And I have tried a lot of the product. It is awesome. Absolutely awesome. And you can order it online or by phone, 817-924-6821. Give them a call. Say, hey, Marvin, I heard you on WFO. What do you got? They've got barbecue rubs. They've got coffee wood for grilling and smoking. All kinds of barbecue products and recipes. They sell grills. They've got everything. But the bottom line is, who doesn't like either coffee or barbecuing? Especially now that the summer is here. So jump online, check out RodaxCoffeeAndGrills.com, go to WFOradio.com and click on the link if you can't figure it out. Bottom line is, they've got barbecue rubs of all different flavors. They're very, very cool. But the coffees, the Nitro Fuel Espresso, that's what I'm having in the morning, and it's great. I'm like a rocket ship. I'm like Richie Crampton blasting down the track, and it's great stuff. Give them a call, 817-924-6821. You can order online. They'll ship it out wherever you are around the world. They've been in business since 1976. That is Rodak Coffee and Barbecue Grills. Check them out at RodakCoffeeAndGrills.com.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car champ, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
A regular man trims his chest hair. A man's man trims his chest hair with a chainsaw. A regular man teaches his kid how to ride a bicycle. A man's man teaches his kid how to do a wheelie on a dirt bike. A regular man celebrates Father's Day. A man's man celebrates Father's Day at the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. It's everything that makes men feel like men. Fast cars, loud noise, and enough horsepower to make your bones rattle. So don't spend Father's Day making an imprint on the couch. Get off your rear end and do something fun. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Tickets start at just $20 and $79 for the whole weekend. Order before June 7th and save. Get yours today at ThunderValleyTix.com or call 423-BRISTOL.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist.
I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Time for Funny Car here on WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro, and all you first-time listeners. Don't forget to get subscribed, sign on, follow us on all the social media, Facebook and Twitter. But most importantly, either subscribe to the show on iTunes, download the app, or bookmark WFOradio.com because you hear the winners. And right now we're going to speak with the quickest funny car driver the world has ever known and most recent winner at E-Town, Cruz Patragon. Cruiser, welcome back.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Very well. How about yourself? Pretty good, I would imagine.
Doing great. A little tired, but doing great.
You know, I think about you guys, and I get back from the travel, and I haven't done really much of anything, and you've got that funny car putting you back in the seat, and then the parachutes sending you forward in the seat many times over the course of the weekend. In your case, what, 8 times over the course of the weekend? And you're running around. It's got to wear you out.
Yeah, well, it's that and everything else goes into it, just the wear and tear on, the late nights, early mornings. And believe me, I'm a driver, and so I don't have the schedule that the team does. The team guys get out there at least an hour, sometimes 2 hours before I do, and they're there at least an hour or two. But it's just the roller coaster emotions, and so it's everything all in one. Yeah, it usually takes me, 2 to 3 days to recover from and just get my energy level back up. And it's always been that way. You can't say that it's, I'm getting older or whatever, but I was that way when I was in my 20s, man. It just kicks your butt.
It was such an entertaining race. Let's talk about that historic run on, Saturday night, where you went 395.9 at the same track that Ron Capps was able to do the quickest ever 2 years ago. It has taken 2 years to eclipse that run. You finally did it, and we saw something on the scoreboard that no one has ever seen. What did it feel like in the car?
Well, it was a mixture of both unbelievable acceleration early in the run and then a little bit of a slowdown effect, and that's usually indicative of a cylinder drop. And so at the time in the car, I'm thinking, God, it was great. And then, I was a little bit disappointed, you could say, in that it decelerated when it should have been. I was hoping for just a complete acceleration, just the whole way down. And those are usually indicative of really good runs. But here's what I found out. So anyway, to say that I was surprised when I heard 3.95, I thought the whole time, and to this day, I'm still thinking, what could it have been? And so the cylinder dropped at 3.2, number one or two cylinder. And hey, it was a great run. And what was really great, it was even a greater early numbers that allowed us to still have enough momentum to carry that 95 and put that on the board as the quickest run ever for funny cars. But, you know, I'm just looking at it as a realist or as it is, and I'm thinking, okay, well, we had a little bit more in there, maybe a 93, 94 minimum elapsed time. But any way you cut it, we'll take it. It was just a great achievement for our team. We've had such a, you know, below average start to the season. That was definitely a great shot for our team.
Well, you're working on a lot of new stuff, from what I understand. You mentioned the start of the season hasn't been great. You were not in the top 10 in points, but then all of a sudden, back-to-back final rounds, and you're able to win at Englishtown. Would you say that you've kind of got a handle on how these new parts work? It just seems logical that there would be a curve in figuring new things out.
Yeah, I would say we've got a handle on it. That's not to say we're going to, you know, continue this. I mean, it's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot of great running cars. But, yeah, I would say we have no excuses. We had our growing period with the new cylinder heads and, you know, some new clutch stuff that we tried at the end of last year and we've started off the season with. So, yeah, I would say, what are we, eight or nine races into the season? Yeah, we're to that point now where, hey, we can race and not have to struggle too much. I do think that what we had at Englishtown was unique in that we had extremely good air quality conditions. In other words, it was easy to make power. You know, these nitro motors make a lot of power anyway, but the fact that we had, especially on Sunday, we had the altimeter read 300 feet below sea level. So to say that I had notes I could go back to was, that was not the case. So, you know, we were trying like heck to give it away the first couple three rounds, and we finally got the car to do what we wanted to do, and it came in the final against Dale Worsham there. But it was a great great two events, the last two events. Like you said earlier, we runner up at Topeka and had a great string of runs there, and we had a blower belt issue or a blower issue in the final. I would say that was a much easier race for us to negotiate than this Englishtown. This Englishtown was a tough race from start to finish, but it was nice to prevail and get that first win of the year for the Snap-on team.
Pedal fests in each of the first three rounds, you versus Terry Haddock, you get there first, 4:52. I got to say, I know that it's all about trying to perform to the best of your ability, but as a drag racing fan, I love the pedal fest. I love when it's just driver and car just trying, struggling to get there, and someone always does get there first. You versus Tommy Johnson, in the second round, you versus Jack Beckman. Those are all really good drivers, and you're able to negotiate the situation better than they did and get there first. I think the fans love that stuff, even if it isn't a perfect run.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's how you have to win them. I've been doing this. I think I won my 500th round a couple races ago, and I'm thinking, man, there's a lot of rounds like that. You just have to be ready, and as a driver, you know, you just have to figure it out. And so I've been doing it long enough to realize that if I get in those situations, you can let your instincts take over because you don't have a lot of time to think about it or contemplate. You just have to kind of react on the fly and just kind of go with it. So, you know, those are always satisfying to win, but the crew chief part of me or the tuner part of me is disappointed. I'm going down there, kicking myself for not having a car, and I'm sure crew chiefs do that, with drivers. Drivers like it, but at the same time, crew chiefs are sitting back on the starting line, scratching their head, wondering where they went wrong, and so I kind of have a little bit of both of those emotions going. But, you know, hey, to get the win, like they say, you take them any way you can get them.
Final round against Dale Worsham. You did something that I think is just awesome and classy and sympathetic, empathetic, all of those things, by giving the Wally to Connie Coletta. You revealed that to us in the winner's circle. Back-to-back races, you made the final where maybe the emotional side of things were with the opponent, whether it was Courtney for the 100th win or Dell, obviously, with all the history at Englishtown for the Coletta team and the DHL car. But you got to go out there and try to win nonetheless, and you were able to win this race. And it seemed that the first thing is on your mind, you wanted to give the trophy to Connie Coletta because there are things more important than individual race wins. I thought that was just great.
Well, I appreciate Joey bringing that up, and you know, it was simple. I thought about it before the final. Believe it or not, I'm getting my helmet on, and I thought about the situation. I thought about Scott, and I thought, if I win, this is what I'm going to do. If I lose, I'm going to go over there and shake all those guys' hands, the Colette group and the Oberhoffers, who I consider friends. And so I felt like, hey, that's the right thing to do. You know, the man lost his son on that very racetrack, and you know, I thought, you know, either way, I'm not going to mind losing this race, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to get back where we need to be in points and all that stuff. So we went out there, did our jobs, and results were what they were. And I remember looking at Dell out there. I can tell the guy was disappointed. But then I, you know, immediately wanted to get the trophy and take it over. I was hoping Connie would still be there. Sure enough, I got a ride on the golf cart to his pit area, and there Connie was. I autographed it real quick and wrote a quick note on there. And I didn't know how Connie was going to react. I didn't know if he'd throw it back at me or whatever. But, hey, you know, Connie didn't say much. And as I didn't expect him to, I said, hey, Connie, I want you to have this. And, you know, to get the reaction from not only his team, but some of the fans was just meant a lot to me. But like I said, we still remember the person we lost several years back, and that's what that was about.
It was a great gesture and a tough situation where, you know, you have to go out there and win the race. That's your job.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, it was, you know, you normally don't think too much about that other than, you know, our own, what we have to do. But, you know, we made a good run in the final, and they did too. I heard Dell all the way down there. They had a good car. It could have gone either way. And, you know, I just, like I said, I lost my dad at a very young age, and I know it's a different scenario, but I could only imagine. I have a daughter now, so I think you know, I think that was like I said, it just was something that I did. And but you know, looking at the race, you know, I was looking at the, you know, it's nice to see different cars. You know, you look at the Coletta group; they have two cars. They're both their cars in the top five in points. The Force teams are there as they always are, and Schumacher. So it's nice this year. For some reason, they're just a lot more. You know, it just seemed like there's a lot more depth. I know Wilkerson's running better. So for a competitor, I mean, it's, you know, these races are pretty exciting for the fans because you get a mixture of multi-car teams with, you know, single teams and, you know, and two-car teams. You know, you just get a little bit of everything. And so it was a great race. You know, fans got to see a little bit of everything, some fast, quick runs and some, you know, some tire smokers. But, hey, that's why they put a pedal on these cars that, you know, sometimes the driver's got to, you know, get up in there and do what he can to help the team win.
Very interesting stuff. A Pedregon car, a DSR car, a Coletta car, and a JFR car in the semifinals. I think that tells the story. The final round streak of John Force Racing ends at 15 races, but that was pretty incredible. But you're right, the field is wide open in Funny Car, and it's going to be interesting to see. Now, we got Bristol coming up after a weekend off, which you get to enjoy the win a little bit more. But I want to ask you about something else. You already know, or we already know, that Cruz Pedregon is the driver and Juan Mota is the crew chief, and they are synonymous. But I want to ask something else. There's this thing called the Pilot J, Pilot Flying J Truck Driver Challenge, and they send out scores and everything. And I like to look at it every time someone tweets it at me, and I see that Gary Cummin from Western Motorsports, that V Gaines driver, and Mike O'Gwynn, who listens to the show, might be out there right now from DSR, are 1 and 2. But if you go down to number 6, there's this guy, Cruz Pedregon, as the driver. And I'm wondering, is that you, or is that your driver just listing you as the name?
No, that's me. I wanted to do it. I think it's cool that Flying J puts on this contest, and some of these drivers that drive these rigs up and down the highway can win a great prize. There's a great cash prize up for grabs. And, you know, I'm a truck guy, grew up around diesel trucks, and, you know, I'm gonna enter this thing and see what I can do. And, a little disappointing in how I, you know, I mean, I was a pretty competitive guy, but I got to say that the course was pretty tough. The only complaint I have about it, and I talked to the Flying J people, is they allow too much time to run the course. In other words, you can back up, get out of the seat, look up, make sure. To me, it ought to be, like I said, my only what I would change on the contest is real life scenarios, because they're trying to preach safety, is to allow your driver to go in there and not have a second chance at it. So I would say that that strategy, I was trying to go too fast and hit a couple of cones. But other than that, I was just glad to be, I guess in the top 10 was a kind of a nice thing. But I hope for the next, I don't know if you told your listeners, but it's a four round scenario where you get, I don't know, 30 or 40 drivers from all these teams and they compete, on these courses. And, I didn't do very good on my written DOT test. I think I finished fifth on
sixth.
The actual contest.
I'm looking at it right now.
Cool.
Sixth.
But that's me. Yeah, I'm all about the trucks, and you know, I love them. I tell you what, the two guys that finished one and two, those guys run Peterbilt similar. I think Kenworths or Peterbilt with the long hoods. Similar to what they drive, what they drove at the Flying J event. So, I don't want to say those guys have an advantage, but we definitely have our work cut out because those guys are pretty slick.
The competitor comes out. I hear it.
Yeah. But I tell you what, it's not just anybody can, you know, you have to have, if you're average, it'll show. You'll be a cone running over machine, but, you know, I think I'm pretty good. And, you know, I went out there and, but I think I'm going to do a lot better the next time. I think I'm looking for top three material next time.
Does your truck, Cruz Pedregon, have an alias? I mean, there's Juan Mota, the crew chief alias.
No. Actually, you know, I want everybody to know that Juan Mota came from, it was an accident. We stumbled onto it. I was up in the media center, I think it was last year. And I compartmentalize. When I'm in the driver's seat, I'm a driver. And I get out there, you know, in the trailer, I'm a tuner. And so somebody mentioned something to me about the other guy or something. So I just said Juan Valdez, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's the coffee guy. So I changed it to Juan Mota, and I got Juan Mota from Cheech and Chong back in the day. I don't know if you guys listen to Cheech and Chong, but some of your listeners probably know what I'm talking about. But Juan Mota was actually one of the characters in one of the skits they did back in the day. So anyway, that's the story.
That is awesome, and give me a reason to go search some Cheech and Chong comedy bits with a reason, because of course I'm speaking for myself. Who didn't grow up with a little Cheech and Chong comedy?
Yeah, I think it was the Big Bamboo album, I think, and big fans of those guys. I actually have Up in Smoke on my one of my DVDs, so every once in a while I need to loosen up a little bit. I'll just put on some Cheech and Chong.
Classic parody. Very funny stuff. Cruz, great watching you win. It was an awesome race weekend, and next race will be Bristol, the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. What is your read on that place?
Well, I like that place. I think it presents a whole other set of challenges. It's a little bit like Topeka, and it's a little bit of altitude. It can get warm there, which makes the track challenging, and I love the challenging track. So I'm looking forward to it. I think we're coming into the busy part of the year. I think we're eighth in points. We'd obviously, like everybody else, we'd like to get away from that 10th spot as far as we can, just to try to lock ourselves in and maybe set this thing on cruise control around the Western Swing. But a great event. Looking forward to it. Hope some of the fans come out, enjoy some great racing there at the Thunder Valley there. But appreciate you guys having us, Joe. I appreciate enjoy having you at the track there, and looking forward to the next event. Hopefully, we get to talk to you again.
That's in your hands, sir, and I know it is definitely going to happen in the near future. Cruz, thank you so much for coming on WFO and sharing your win with us.
All right, Joe. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Cruz Pedregon with us here on WFO Radio, and very cool to see that quickest run of all time. I was down on the top end, and Cruz popped out. It was pretty wild how pumped up those guys were. And I have to say, it was as an electric a moment as it has been for any win that I have seen. The guys were fired up. They hadn't won. They just ran the quickest run of all time. And they were fired up, fist pumping, and just very, very happy. And the moment lingered for a while as the ESPN interview went on ESPN3. And it was just really, really great to be there up close and see it. Congratulations to the whole Snap-on Tools team and Cruz and all those guys. I know there was a birthday in the bunch this weekend as well. You know, I got to see a lot of WFO Radio listeners out there. I got this cool shirt, tie-dyed with the WFO logo. It's not available for purchase yet. But Dave and Amy were out there. I saw them earlier in the year. They were rocking their WFO radio shirts. They made the tie-dye. They started out of the white T-shirt, and they did tie-dye. And they're both rocking tie-dye shirts at the NHRA. How funny. And I got one and a handkerchief as well. Is that a bandana? I think it is. And I love it. I appreciate it. I put it up on Instagram, made it to the Facebook page and Twitter account, yada, yada, social media, et cetera, and so on. Lobster bisque. Bottom line, very cool seeing the WFO radio listeners out there in Englishtown. And it's a track that, you know, my father used to go to when he was younger and just loved it. I love Englishtown. I love the track. I love the layout. I love the people, the attitude. You know, getting around in Jersey is a bit of a challenge if you're from a place with less people. But here's the deal. People who don't understand that part of the country, you got to walk a mile in someone else's shoes before criticizing. This is a place where there's just too many human beings, man. It's just millions and millions of people all on top of each other having to figure out how to get along. And that's what is amazing about it, because for the most part, they do. They get along. The Northeasterners are quick with the wit, and they're sharp, and the names on the computer, 90% of them are Italian-American, which is a lot of fun. It was very fun time being out there at Englishtown. And I actually spent an extra day out there driving around Union and Milburn, New Jersey, because that's where my family is from. So it was a good time. I would put it on the bucket list. I would go see it, because it is really an all-encompassing facility. They do motocross. They do drifting. They are named one of the drift capitals of the world. And they're in such reasonably close proximity to New York City. By going to the race, you can do a lot of other stuff. I really enjoyed my time at Englishtown. And the Bud Zone is the coolest place to watch racing that I think you're going to find, because they took the old tower that they had had before they built the new tower, and they put it right on the finish line, pretty much. So you can sit there a story up, so you are raised up in the air at an observation deck, and watch the races come by. And I really believe that that alone is a very underutilized area at most tracks. I think that most track operators should have some sort of observation deck, not necessarily seating, but a hangout area, as we're seeing in all these modern new baseball stadiums. They have an area where you can watch the game while standing up, hanging out, having a beer, is pretty much what we're talking about. And that's what they have at Englishtown. And the place you want to watch a drag race from, of course, the starting line is cool. You see the cars, they roll up, they do the burnout, they back up, they stage, they accelerate. That's great. But for my money, I have to take in a couple of runs from the finish line to watch these machines come screaming down at full speed. That's where the action is. And most tracks, most, not many, but most, do not take advantage of that. That they have two ends to the racetrack. Why not an observation deck? That's what I'm calling it. Observation deck. Where you can go and hang out. Maybe it's an aluminum deck. Bleacher material, but all on the same thing. That you're just kind of standing around, hanging out. With a rail to lean up against. Far enough away from the track that you can't, that, you know, crazy people can't throw things on the track. And sit there and hang out and watch the racing. Hanging out with your buddies while these cars come screaming by at 150 to 250 miles an hour. Englishtown has that, and it's a very unique thing. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from Jed Coughlin Jr. and Andrew Hines. Plus, Brandon Cross from Bristol Dragway going to join us. Don't forget, follow us on WFO Radio on Twitter, on Facebook, all our social media, and download the app. We'll be back after this on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
On Valentine's Day, he took his wife to that expensive, fancy restaurant. On Halloween, he took the kids around the neighborhood to ask strangers for candy. So this Father's Day weekend, let's do what Dad wants to do. Go to the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. 10,000 horsepower,
300 miles an hour, and nitro-pumping power that'll make your bones rattle. See drag racing's biggest stars, like John Force and his daughters Courtney and Brittany, make this the best Father's Day ever. Start a new Father's Day weekend tradition at the Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals. Tickets start at just $20, $79 for the entire weekend. Plus, save on tickets and get your kids' tickets free if you order before June 7th. Just call 423-BRISTOL or go online to ThunderValleyTix.com.
Red Line Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found and Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now.
Now,
the stars of drag racing, WFO Radio NHRA Nitro.
Cruz, what about the guys with the heads? A lot of TV time for your old mustache, which it's like, hey, there's Cruz with the mustache.
Here's the funny thing about it. A couple people told my brother, hey, these guys have your guys' head like fat heads, like walking around with them, but they painted a mustache on one of you guys. And I looked at them thinking, they didn't paint that thing on. That's what I had. And I was supporting one of them in the early 90s, you know. And I look at it now thinking, oh, man, of all the pictures. In fact, it looked like I had an afro even.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand at WFORadio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio, where you hear the winners, and we're talking E-Town. The 46th Toyota Summer Nationals, and what an event it was. My goodness. And with all the records that were set and the quickest funny car run of all time, the quickest pro stock and the fastest pro stock run of all time, one of the zaniest aspects of it was the first round of pro stock where guys and girls were not getting down the racetrack. Actually, Erica got down the racetrack. Great. But it was just a tough round. We're going to talk about it because at the end of the day, the last man standing was Jeg Coughlin Jr., who joins us now. Jeg, welcome back to WFO again.
Well, thanks, Joe. Always great to be back.
The Mopars have really come on you and then Alan and then you. It's just been a real, you guys are emerging as a dominant force. Of course, you were the reigning champion, doing a great job defending your title. But this race is always special when you come to E-Town on the calendar.
Man, it was, I'd like to think if our listeners and viewers and fans that actually attended the race didn't get excited, man, we need to check their pulse, because there was a lot of action going on. As you led into, you know, we saw, national records fall in pro stock motorcycle. We saw fall in pro stock car. If I'm not mistaken, we saw it in funny car and potentially top fuel, or did we not see it in top fuel?
We did not see a record fall in top fuel, but we saw track records, I think, in all categories.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it was a situation where, you know, when we go to Englishtown, we're either faced with one of three weather scenarios. Extremely hot. You know, this was the Summer Nationals for years we used to go to in July. Recently been moved up, several weeks, and are we going to be faced with, which Mother Nature's going to show up? Is it going to be hot and humid like it can be? Is it going to be cool and crisp like we want it to be? Or is it going to rain? And this year we were dazzled with, high barometers, low vapor pressures, you know, low water content air, and just fast air. And that is a recipe for the natural aspirated classes of pro stock and pro stock motorcycle to just shine and thrive on that. We don't have a power adder like Top Fuel with supercharger and the nitromethane fuel. So when we get these conditions, man, we're just salivating. And our crew chiefs, Mark Ingersoll and Adam Hornberger, and Roy Johnson behind the engine team, did a heck of a job dialing us in. We were in the 640 zone and qualifying. Ended up qualifying number one with Alan Starr at 47.2, and I was back a few ticks at a 48.9. And we slept on that Saturday night, woke up Sunday morning to yet higher barometric pressures, lower water content in the air. We're like, oh, my goodness. But there wasn't a cloud in the sky, and the sun was just beaming. It wasn't hot, but it was beaming, and we knew that was going to wreak havoc because, yes, we're going to make more horsepower, and, yes, the track is not going to be as adhering as it had been in the previous 2 days, and we saw that in pro stock in particular. You know, I know when I left the clutch out first round next to local favorite Kenny Delco, you know, my car immediately launched well for about 5 to 8 feet and then just went into wheel spin like uncontrollable. I got it in the second gear, immediately spiked damn near to the rev loader in less than an instant of a second, which is not even humanly catchable. And the car was sideways on, they said off all four wheels at one point in time. You know, I'm not wanting to give up this round win. We certainly had the performance advantage over Kenny. And I was just waiting to see his yellow car flash by the right side of me as I was going side to side in my lane, and you know, was able to get the thing settled down, get the thing back into fifth gear, and really whip it over the finish line for the win light. So that's how we started our day. But as a blessing to us, you know, there were some other great runs in the session, including a national record from Richard Freeman and Eric Anders' car that ran 6:46, and so we used that as motivation within the team to say, "Listen, we can point this, that, or the other, but bottom line is it's out there, and we need to be the magicians and get this car balanced out well." And we made progress for round two. We made huge progress for round three, and made even more progress in the final round. And had me on the edge of my chair all day, I can promise you.
There were so many different aspects. Let's go back to that first round, though. Well, first of all, before we go round by round, because I got a couple of things I want to ask. Your Dodge Dart with the Hemi engine, the Mopars in particular, both yours and Alan's, have a very unique sound at idle. Now, we know these are naturally aspirated engines with carburetors, but it sounds like, just the way the lope of the engine is, it sounds like there's a supercharger on that thing. Now, I know there's not, but that right. Supercharger sound at idle that everybody loves so much and you imitate with your buddies, you know, talking about like the alcohol class cars with, you know, that rump, rump. Your car is doing that. How is that achieved? Obviously, you can't give me secrets, but have you noticed the very distinctive noises coming out of your machine?
Yeah. You know, it's really something that's just surfaced. I don't know. Something's changed internally in the engine package that's helped contribute to that. I mean, looking at our performances and compared to the rest of the pack, it doesn't look like we've gained a ton over top of anyone. So I wouldn't say there's like a white towel hiding our secret, but you know, the carburetor is just in between that the idle and intermediate circuit where it's trying to pull fuel from both areas, and it's just creating a slight surge. And when the idle, I like to run my idle just a taste higher than, say, Alan or most, just because I like a little bit higher idle, and that's vulnerable for putting it into that stage of the carburetor system. So, you know, if we were fuel injected, we pull our laptop out, wave a couple of keystrokes over it, and the thing is just idle like it was running on methanol. But not the case, not at this point in pro stock. But it does have a little unique sound. I've had that, you know, in my 15 plus years in pro stock, I've run across that experience several times, and yeah, it, honestly, fires me up. So nothing wrong with that.
It is very cool sounding. I got to admit, it's when you're pulling into the water box, it sounds very, very fierce. Now, you talked about that first round run, Kenny Delko, and he didn't get back after it. And I understand it was crazy to watch that. And I think standing on the starting line, hearing the fans cheer and go crazy about it, it said to me that the normalcy of the pro stock run, the efficiency of a standard pro stock run, as great as it may be at any given moment, sometimes the fans like to see drivers have to deal with situations out of nowhere. And whether it was a good performing first round or not, like, for instance, Dave beat Vincent, both running sevens. Roger Brogdon ran 7.78 and beat Larry Morgan running 9.91. The fans seemed to be loving it, the fact that things were going out of control.
Yeah, it was... That was my understanding, and I could hear a bit of that from the cockpit on the first pair. So I think the first pair was I can't recall. Well, it was Greg and someone else spoke real hard. And the second pair, I think, might have been the Vincent Tommy matchup that you mentioned. And yeah, you know, it's nice to see. And my Achilles heel, without question, is pedal in the car while it's in gear. I have a tendency to want to take, be all or nothing and try to get the car in the next gear to get it settled down. And, probably one out of 10 runs, it just isn't going to go. And that's something, it's hard to simulate that in testing, but, if I can get off the throttle with the car still in gear, never touch that damn clutch pedal, that could put me in a little better position to have a high 6 second elapsed time instead of, having to let things settle out and then trying to get the Liberty transmission back into gear and kind of nurse it down through there. So, it's I think the fans did enjoy a little bit of the mix up. And then I think what they really enjoyed after that was seeing that 6:46 run.
What about that, Jag? Like, what did you guys, how did you guys react to that situation? Erica then goes on to run Dave. Dave beats her, but when the quickest run of all time goes up on the board after everyone's dealing with too much power, she and they were able to figure it out. But at same point, that was history at that point. No one has ever run quicker than that.
That was, it was awesome. And for the class, it was great, obviously. For their team, we certainly felt like we could run low 47s, potentially tickle the high 46s on Q4 Saturday afternoon. And, in my case, we slowed to a 49.0. AJ picked way up to a 47.2 for the pole. And when we, like I said earlier, when we woke up Sunday morning with the drier air, higher barometric pressure, we knew that the air was capable of running quicker than the 47.2 without a question. It was just a matter of, navigate a racetrack, with your gearing package, with your tire package, with your clutch package, and with your weight distribution package. And it doesn't take a lot of all those things. It just takes, good fine tuning of each to get the car to accelerate as if the track was as good as it was the day before. And as you saw in Pro Stock, a lot of that was missed. And in our case, we did miss it. We got away with it. And we were able to capitalize on it and, get the performance near by the end of the day what it should have been. A low 50 would have been a really good run as the air got up to nearing 80 degrees, by 3-4 p.m. But we ran a 51.1 there in the finals. So we did adapt to it, and fortunately we were able to bring home the race win.
Took down Dave in the semis, and then you mentioned the final round against Greg, who is obviously very hungry. Had a 10 reaction time to your 16, so you guys were both in the ballpark, but then he obviously had to lift, and you went 6:51. The low ET of the day for you guys. And just looking at the numbers, 58th career win, second this year, your fourth at Englishtown. But when you add the wins of you and Greg together, just as a rivalry, we talked the last time you were on the show a couple of weeks ago about the whole Summit versus Jegs aspect of it, but forget that. Just two great pro stock competitors mixing it up, 9 championships between you, 9 U.S. Nationals between you, 133 wins. One way or the other, if you're an NHRA drag racing fan, you've seen either of these two cars win a ton of races. And when you guys make it to the final round at E-Town together, that's special.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're, you know, neither one of us take it lightly. When Greg and I raced a few weeks ago in the final in Atlanta, you know, he was on a mission. It was his first race back from his heart surgery. Obviously, he looks great from behind the wheel. Looking at the performance and his personal performance, he was doing an unbelievable job. And when I looked, kind of kept my eye on the sheet going through this Sunday at Englishtown, you know, with reaction times and whatnot, on that end of the table, I knew better than to say, oh, well, he's struggling, you know, with 30s and 40s and 50s or whatever he had. I knew that, we'd have to be, my goal was to be between 10 and 20, 12 and 20, to be honest with you. I was 12 that run before against Dave Conley and really left everything alone there to try and repeat that because I felt like, you know, if we could be 15, let's say, you know, he'd have to be near perfect and make his best run of the day to stay in front of us. And, you know, I was happy with that game plan, and fortunately it played out well.
It was a very entertaining race to watch. You get a weekend off, and then it's off to Bristol, Thunder Valley, and we've been trying to convince all our listeners to get out there to Thunder Valley and get their tickets for Father's Day weekend. You've now moved second in the point standings. You and Alan are both tied behind Erica. Make sure my points include Englishtown. Yes, they do. And yeah. So a very solid season, a very strong title defense ongoing, and we're about to get to part of the schedule where it is just one after the next. Bristol, Epping, Chicago, rapid-fire races.
Yeah, no doubt. I think what's been great is, kind of as you were hinting to earlier, you know, both, Alan's Mopar Dodge Dart and my Jake.com Dodge Dart are starting to hit stride. And, we're doing it in a very difficult part of the season where we've, you know, really been faced with our first, back-to-back-to-back runs as we just came through. We've got a little breather, although, today, as we speak, Alan is in Bristol making some test runs for our package going into the Bristol race. Bristol's always a unique track to the Pro Stock cars as far as traversing the actual terrain of the racetrack. And we've got some new things that we're testing there and felt like we could do just the one car. But on further, you know, with Bristol, Epping, Chicago, and Norwalk all within our sight, you know, that is a great time for us to get some momentum going and would love to, you know, continue to leap up in the points as we have. I think I've come from eighth to second in the last three races. It's been a good stretch for us, and we know the opposite can send you right back to where you came from. So we feel real good. I think our confidence is building with the new Dodge Dart. And, you know, we can't thank the SRT engineers in Auburn Hills, Michigan enough. They did a really nice job with the Mopar folks putting this new package together and working with the crew chiefs and the engineers on getting the car well balanced for the different situations. So I think this is going to prove out to be a great time for us the next four. Then we get another brief week off, although we typically hightail from Norwalk right to Denver. Just tag team driving all the way to Denver so we can test within the rules of 1 week prior to the national and meet there in Denver. And that kicks off another rally of straight races with Denver and Seattle and Sonoma. So it's, a blink of an eye and we're preparing for Brainerd already.
It gets wild, it gets tough, and we're going to be here on WFO to cover it all. Jag, thank you so much for calling into the show and sharing the behind the scenes of your victory out there in Englishtown. It was a great crowd, great race, had great weather, lots of greatness going on, lots of drama as well as we're watching the championship points battle shape up, but also a lot of very entertaining race wins to talk about. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and thank you for always coming on WFO.
Hey, my pleasure, Joe. And as you mentioned, we'd love to have a lot of your listeners and viewers out there to come check us out in Bristol. It's a great facility, Bruton Smith facility that's top-notch, first-rate, and the picturesque setting is, if you've never been to Bristol or the Fountains of Tennessee, man, it's one of our favorite stops on the tour. And it's our hometown race with J&J Racing and Alan Johnson. So you won't be disappointed, and we'll give you a hell of a show.
Jag, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Joe.
Jeg Coughlin Jr. with us here on WFO Radio, the reigning Mellow Yellow Pro Stock World Champion. And his machine just has a very distinct sound to it, like a supercharged car, like, and then he does the burnout and it goes away. It's crazy because it's naturally aspirated. And he gave an explanation why. I don't know. I think it sounds cool. And I spent some time under the tower. I was talking about photographs that I tweeted on my Instagram page and whatnot. And, oh, don't you hate all the social media just jargon? It's just so annoying. I'm listening to a radio show the other day, and I listen to sports talk radio. I'm a talk radio guy. That's what I listen to. And the show basically sounded like this, right? I tweeted the other day about a Facebook post that I made and some comments that I got about a share that happened to me on my Instagram when people were looking at my Twitter. It's become demented and twisted, as we say that on a podcast, right? Gotta love and hate the internet all at the same time, backwards. When we come back, we're going to hear from Andrew Hines, who's going to tell us about the Screamin' Eagle, Harley-Davidson's Vance and Hines machines and their dominance that is back and returned. I wonder what is going to happen. I'm sure they're going to be working some extra hours in the other shops out there to try to run these guys down by Epping. There were some quick bikes. Hector Arana Jr. was right there. There were quick bikes. Matt Smith, quick bikes. But you got to put it together and win a race. It'll be interesting to see who can step up. And then Brandon Cross is going to join us from Bristol Dragway. He is the director and going to tell us all about some things going on out there at Bristol. The next race that I will be at, which is Bristol, and hopefully you WFO radio listeners are going to come see us. Click the banner ad and check it out. Get your tickets before it's too late. It's Father's Day weekend. Come hang with us out at Bristol Dragway. When we come back, Andrew Hines with us here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
A regular man trims his chest hair. A man's man trims his chest hair with a chainsaw. A regular man teaches his kid how to ride a bicycle. A man's man teaches his kid how to do a wheelie on a dirt bike. A regular man celebrates Father's Day. A man's man celebrates Father's Day at the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. It's everything that makes men feel like men. Fast cars, loud noise, and enough horsepower to make your bones rattle. So don't spend Father's Day making an imprint on the couch. Get off your rear end and do something fun. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals at Bristol Dragway. Tickets start at just $20 and $79 for the whole weekend. Order before June 7th and save. Get yours today at ThunderValleyTix.com or call 423-BRISTOL.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist.
I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO. The stars of drag racing. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Big Daddy Don Garlitz, the guy talk about, just I'm going to throw some buzzwords out there, green, environmental viability. These kind of conversations have not really happened before, Don. And to have you, in a way, leading a charge has to be surprising for some of the people out there.
Well, you know what my new slogan is? Garbage goes green.
Wow. But the cars are still going to be black, though, right?
Yes. We'll just have green uniforms.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand at WFOradio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
NHRA Nitro here on WFO Radio, talking to the Mellow Yellow Series winners. That's what we do on our winners' editions. Hopefully you are all subscribed on iTunes, you've downloaded the app, and you're ready to rock and roll, because we are about to hear from Pro Stock motorcycle winner Andrew Hines, who joins us now. Andrew, welcome back to WFO. Congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. Glad to be back. You know, it's always a joy to talk to you on these Tuesday mornings, because I guess that means that we won on Sunday. So
that
glad
is
to be here.
That is exactly what it means, and you guys are doing a lot of that at the Four Wide, then in Atlanta, and now here. All of a sudden, the Harley-Davidson domination, the days of Harley-Davidson domination, seem to be back.
Yeah, you know, we're running really good. We got consistent motorcycles and, you know, riding very consistent right now, nailing shift points and making sure that we're getting almost everything we can get out of these bikes every time we take them up down the racetrack. So wind lights come with that. You know, when you're consistent and fast, that's just the nature of the beast. You know, you get those round winds and get those mellow yellow points.
The redesign of the engine, it seems a million miles ago, but in racing years, you guys seem to be really just emerging now, finding the tune-up now. You were coming on towards the tail end of last year, but right now it seems like you're really being able to tweak these things to wring out every aspect of performance. And I know something you were working on was reaction time, and it seems like you've gotten that much better.
Yeah, you know, Matt had a good idea going into this race about how to get the bikes to react a little faster. We've been struggling with that. Probably since the middle of last year, we were having to run these motors a little different off the starting line, and it really started killing our reaction times, and we weren't having our typical 20s and 30s in qualifying like we normally have, and then step it up to a teen or a 20 on Sunday. Eddie and I kind of fell back into the area where we feel like we're hitting a tree, and we're coming up, you know, 45 to 55, and that was, you know, it's, you don't appreciate that as a rider because you feel like you're tagging it, and you let go of the clutch, and then the bike sits there, and then it takes off. So Matt came into Englishtown with a new clutch setup and immediately saw the results. You know, I felt like I was a little bit late on the light the first qualifier, and I was 37 on the tree. So that was definitely a breath of fresh air. You know, instead of having a 70 or an 80 like it probably would have been in Atlanta, it was in the 30s and 40s all through qualifying. So that was a little bit of a confidence builder going into Sunday because, you know, if you're giving up reaction time on the track, you're just asking to get beat. So luckily we stepped it up a couple hundredths, and we know where and how we did that, so we can work on that for the next couple races and try and get our V-Rods back into the 20s and teens.
The number one and three qualifiers, and we're very strong. Let's talk about the 200 mile per hour thing, because this is what I consider probably, I'm sure someone could come up with something else maybe if we really dug down deep, but maybe not, the last major speed milestone that is nice and round and easy for everyone to understand that we're going to see maybe ever. I mean, the Pro Stockers went 215. The funny cars and top fuelers, how fast are they going to end up going? I don't think they'll ever get to like a 350 or a 340 just because of the nature of the tracks and the situation. Pro Stock motorcycle, 200. You guys were knocking on the door, but it just wasn't quite out there. What do you think it's going to take? And this is something that we're eventually going to see. Would you agree?
It's definitely going to happen sooner or later. You know, right now, it's just everybody needs Mother Nature on their side. And this weekend, everything was kind of aligning to where it looked like it could have happened. You know, killer barometer in Englishtown, really close to sea level up in the northeast. And you got a lot of trees around there, so there's plenty of oxygen in the air. You know, good thing is that we had sun on the racetrack, so we're able to still get off the starting line really well. You know, there's some of these tracks, like Redding, towards the end of the year that you get really killer air. But typically there's cloud cover, so the track is, you know, 55, 60 degrees. It's a lot harder to get a hold of it. If you do get a hold of it, you can run a good ET. But, you know, when you got a little bit of heat in the track, it helps. Sunday, obviously, in Englishtown was pretty hot, so the track was going away. But Saturday was, you know, you couldn't ask for conditions any better than that. That was Candyland for all us naturally aspirated guys. And, you know, it's going to happen. But we're going to need the tailwinds. That's the big thing. You know, we did have killer air on Sunday, but we had absolutely no tailwind to help us out, push us down the racetrack. And when you have aerodynamics like all these motorcycles have with, you know, if you compare it to a pro stock car, every single motorcycle out there is horrible because you got a rider sitting on top of the thing instead of this nice smooth surface. So anytime you get the wind pushing at your back, it just makes the motorcycle think it's going a lot slower, and it's easier to push through the wind. So it's going to be a long time till anybody does it without the aid of Mother Nature. So it's going to be a lot of horsepower. You know, typically 10 horsepower is probably 2 mile an hour. So 1.5, 2 mile an hour. So it's going to be a while till we get to that point. But we're knocking on the door. It's nice to be back in the position with the Harley Davidsons to contend for it. You know, we were thinking last year we saw Hector running 198 towards the end of the year, Sonoma and St. Louis. So we're like, man, he's really close. If he can just get all of it and have the aid of the wind, he can go out there and snatch it. So that was a primary focus for us, was obviously get our V-Rods back running up front. And, you know, to do that, we had to run the speed. And now we're in that position. So it's really cool to be part of the team right now and be back, you know, running real fast with all these guys.
Top speed of the meet, 199.23 by you, low ET by Eddie, 674.7. Let's go round by round. First round, you got to go up against Adam Arana. And Adam, the bike breaks, basically, and you were able to run 677.0 at 198 and get your day started off right. Then you had to go up against the defending race winner, Michael Ray, in the second round, and you went a 676. So you had consistency on your side at that point.
Yeah, it was all about going straight. I've been battling issues with my motorcycle since eliminations in Charlotte at the four-wide race. I was just talking to one of my CNC guys out in the shop about it, actually. In Charlotte, when I was in qualifying, I was telling him I could just let go of the handlebars and the bike would, you know, not actually let go, but theoretically let go of the handlebars and the bike would go straight down the track. And on Charlotte, on Sunday, it flipped a switch and it wants to go left or right as soon as it gets to half track. It doesn't make up its mind until it gets there, and I don't really know until it gets there. And it did that all the way through Atlanta, did that all the way through Englishtown, so that's something that's on our mind, and we're probably going to throw a different tire on it that I used in testing earlier this year when we get to Epping, and you know, hopefully it'll make the bike even more consistent, so yeah, I won't have to be second-guessing which way it's going to go down there. But 676.2 was you know, my best since 2012, so that's my best run on our new two-valve engine, and that was a pretty killer pass. You know, it dug really hard to eighth mile, went 163.30 to half track. Killer travel time, 63.30, so it was nice to get by that round. You know, a big competitor in the other lanes. Guys, you know, they've been around a while, they know how to race, and just that's one of those rounds you like to win.
Semifinals, you got to go up against Hector Jr. On the other side of the ladder, it was the reigning Mellow Yellow champ, Matt Smith, versus Eddie. I hear they had a little bit of a conversation. And for those that don't know, at the top end, it's kind of a weird, fun, unique situation that not everybody gets to see, but it's super cool because all the bikes have to wait for their tow back, pretty much, to get pushed back to the pits. And so it's like a hangout club down there, Drew, and everyone is hanging, and you can't escape your competitors. They are right there, and sometimes a little conversation breaks out. You were setting up to run against Hector Jr., and Eddie and Matt, both who occasionally will talk a little bit, apparently they got into it. Were you there for that?
I was not there for that. That's news to me. I didn't hear that. So I think Eddie might have mentioned something at one point that Matt told him he better have a big gas tank.
That's
Matt
it.
Wasn't staging or something. Yeah,
that's
okay,
it.
That's what it was. And
fun
you know,
stuff.
V-Rods have relatively small gas tanks compared to those other V-twin bikes. So you know, as soon as somebody says something like that, we just, you know, top the tank off as much as we can, and you know, we don't play the game. We just go up there, and if we have to, we'll turn both bulbs on, and Mark will eventually have to tell him to get in there.
That's pretty much what Eddie did as well going in. Hector Jr. and you both had 42 reaction times, and you were able to take him down with a 680. And then final round, you versus Eddie, as Eddie advanced past Matt. And I spoke with Eddie at the last race about racing you, and I understand the dynamic that it's a team, and once the team makes the final round, it's really a successful day for the team, which is the primary goal. And then inter-squad rivalries can take place because everybody has already won as a team. I have always found that sometimes those are the toughest rivalries when, you know, like look at Formula One, the toughest rivalry is always between the two drivers on the same team. And when I asked Eddie about having to go up against you, he just chuckled like, yeah, it's a tough deal. What about from your perspective, seeing as you got this one?
It is a tough deal, you know, and especially going up against Eddie at Englishtown, which is his stomping grounds. You know, he ran that place for 8 years as track manager. So he's got all his friends and family and in-laws and everybody there. And I thought he had me covered because the way his bike had been running all weekend long was phenomenal. And he had lane choice and I hadn't been in the right lane all day that day. And like I said, with my bike deciding which way it wanted to go when it crossed the 8th mile cone, it was kind of unnerving going over that side. I didn't really make a great run in qualifying over there, so it was kind of whatever will be situation. You know, Eddie and I are really good friends. We live a couple doors down from each other in the same neighborhood. Kids play together all the time, so it's whoever gets the wall, he has bragging rights, you know, while our kids are riding bikes on the weekdays. So lunchtime, bragging rights, things like that. But I was listening to Reinhardt on the PA when I was rolling in the water box, and he said it was the 15th time we'd run each other in the final round, and I guess Eddie had won 8 of those prior matches, and I had won 6. So luckily I'm evening up the score a little bit. I set up in the press room, I said 5% of me feels bad for Eddie because it's his hometown race, but the tear he's been on, you know, I did nip him in Charlotte there, but that was a really close race, and he kind of whomped me there in Atlanta. So it's a friendly rivalry, but, you know, you always want to have the faster bike in the pit area. That's, you know, how competitive we are. We love to get wins, and the only good thing is it doesn't get much better than having your teammate in the final.
What I thought was funny, and folks, on the Winner's Circle stage after the event, if you go to an NHRA Mello Yolo Series event, you got to go to the Winner's Circle because I think fun stuff happens there, and what's the point in going out and battling the traffic? Come see the racers. But Andrew was so quick. It was the best reaction time he had all weekend to point out that one of his crew guys was from E-Town and that technically he had an E-Town link just because, you know, you took down Eddie.
Right.
That was smart.
Right. My new mechanic, Mike Mullaney, he came on board this year for Gainesville, so it's his 4th race in. I told him after the semis, I said, man, you're spoiled because we've won the last 2 races and we were guaranteed to win that race since we had both bikes in the final. But, you know, 24-year-old kid went through MMI, and, you know, it just shows you that if you want to get out on a race team, especially a motorcycle team, you can go to one of those motorcycle technical schools. And if you know your stuff, you know, pass some resumes out, and next thing you know, you can end up on a high-caliber team. So, but, yeah, Mike's he's from the Englishtown area. He used to run Top Street Bike out there, and a lot of bracket racers in the area know him. So it was cool for him to get a win. He had his girl there with him, and lots of friends and family. So it was a kind of an emotional deal for him because he was, you know, I think secretively he was really rooting for me since he puts my clutch in every day and every pass. And, you know, both bikes are basically his babies when we're at the shop, but when we're at the racetrack, my bike is priority number one for him. So it's cool that we got him a win at his hometown race.
34th career win. You're third now behind Dave Schultz and Angel. And obviously, you're not stopping anytime soon. So I don't want to say when it will happen or who you will pass, but the bottom line is to be in the top 3 is got to be tremendous.
It is. You know, growing up around this sport, seeing all the greats racing throughout the 90s and, you know, going to races with my brothers in the late 90s and being able to race against him for half a season was pretty cool. You know, just to be associated with those guys, you know, means a lot. And girls, you know, I remember when Angel came out in Denver in 96, I was at that track because Denver was our hometown race. So seeing everybody come out, and it's a different deal, you know. Now to be in this position where I have so many wins, and I've had quite a long career already. I mean, even though I'm relatively young at 31 years old, I've been racing out here for 12 and a half years. So it's, or 12 and a half seasons. You know, it's been a long road. Lots of traveling, lots of ups and downs. That's the nature of drag racing. You know, you're hero 1 week, zero the next. And luckily we're just, we thrive on getting on these runs. You know, it brings a lot of positive feelings into our shop, and all our guys here at the shop feed off that. So it's something I appreciate right now, and I can look back on later in life and say, man, I'm really proud of that.
Next race, Epping, New Hampshire. The tour will head to Bristol, but then a torrid run. Five races in a row for the Pro Stock Motorcycles, beginning in Epping, then heading to Chicago, then Norwalk, then Bandimir, then Sonoma. Five straight for the Pro Stock Motorcycles. And I think at the end of that race in Sonoma, we're going to have a very solid picture as to who's got what, where everybody is, and which teams will be contending for the championship.
Yeah, it's the big thing is having your everything align perfectly to start that run. You know, we do have one weekend off there in between Norwalk and Denver, so you have a little bit of a breather, but you're prepping for going out west. And this year we have the added bonus of having our specialty event back this year, the Miramonte Records Pro Bike Battle. It'll be held out in Sonoma. And those points are earned through qualifying position. So we're sitting pretty good right now. I think I'm tied for second in that position right now. So hopefully we can make it in there in the top eight and have a chance to go out and earn some money. You know, no Mel Yellow points for that race on that Saturday. So just got to make sure everything is 100%. You know, going into those first few races, because you don't want to get behind the eight ball and have some casualties for the engines and be struggling to find a tune-up on a different motor come that point. So it's a hectic deal. You know, those are the hottest races of the year, and it wears the crew guys out, and it wears the fans out, but there's the diehard fans that stick it out there. You know, get to Norwalk, like last year it was 105 degrees or whatever it was, and, you know, they love the sound and the noise, and luckily our Harleys are thumping out there and just riding the wave right now.
You mentioned the Miramonte Records Pro Bike Battle. Danny Griego, he's on the charts. He loves Pro Stock Motorcycle Racing. Basically, his label steps up for the first time in a long time with a lot of bonus money, frankly. If that check is cashed, give me a ballpark of how much help that could provide for a racer who wins it.
Oh, that could be huge, especially you know, for a smaller team that doesn't have a primary sponsor, or a, you know, they just have associates or something like that. That could go a long way for helping them get to the rest of the races. You know, it's a crapshoot. You know, you don't know who you're going to wind up with until that Friday night of qualifying, after the field is set. So, you know, that money goes a long way towards helping teams out, helping people live. And you know, we kick back to our team any time we get bonus money like that. So that's crucial for us to make our guys happy. You know, we just want to go out there and do what we can. That's what Eddie and I enjoy doing, is even when you're not racing for points, it's more enjoyable because you don't have the stress, and everybody's kind of a little more lighthearted, and it's fun. You know, we had the Pro Bike Battle years ago with Ringer sponsoring it, and K&N before that, and then Wax Shop way back in the day. So,
wow. That's a name that I hadn't heard in a while.
Yeah, Wax Shop Pro Bike Bash, or whatever they called it back then. You know, early 90s, I think my dad raced in it 1 year, and, you know, Dave Schultz and Angel and John Myers, and, you know, it's been around for a long time, so it's great to have it back in the sport.
So get on iTunes, folks, and download one of Danny's songs, and I'm sure you will help that out. Andrew, great catching up with you. Congratulations. You guys have really found the performance lately, and you got everybody talking. Now it's back to how do we beat the Harleys once again. There's a lot of great competitors out there, and I have a feeling the pendulum is going to swing a couple more times before this championship gets decided. But congratulations on your great performance so far, and we'll see you in Epping.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Can't wait to get back up there, and you know, it's nice to have these races back-to-back. It keeps you in the racing groove and keeps your mind right. And, you know, it's nice to see fans in different parts of the country from week in, week out. And they keep up on NHRA.com and everything and listen to you on WFO Radio. So there's a lot of great spectators out there that appreciate what we do, and I just got to thank them for that.
Awesome. That is great. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Yeah, not a problem, Joe.
Andrew Hines with us here on WFO Radio, and boy, is he heading up the charts in terms of pro stock motorcycle wins. And the Harley-Davidsons are out on the field right now. It's going to be very interesting to see how everybody, what they can do to reel them in and win some races. Next race out, Epping, and that is going to start a torrid run for the pro stock motorcycles. A class that I have really come to like and enjoy over the years as I get to know the personalities. Obviously, Matt and Angie Smith and John Hall, very cool, Scotty Polachek, that organization. Then you got the Arana organization with Adam and Hector Jr., who is Hector III, but we call him Hector Jr., and then Hector Sr., who is from Miami. They're Miami guys. That is cool. Of course, Star Racing, Michael Ray and Chaz Kennedy. I haven't got to know Chaz just yet, but they all have their own character, their own idea. Steve Johnson out there, the Underdolls, of course, the Harley-Davidsons. I think I got everybody in there, but it is very cool, these rivalries that are going on, and listening to them all chit-chat with each other while they're all sitting there on their bikes, kind of just talking about their runs. That is a very cool experience that is very unique, to say the least. And I love talking about the pro stock motorcycles here on WFO. If you're a fan of pro stock motorcycle, always follow our Twitter and social media, and remember all that Twitter stuff I told you. Follow the social media. You can find it on WFOradio.com. All right, when we come back, we're wrapping up the Toyota Summer Nationals, and Toyota did a great job with the event too. We're going to speak with the director of Bristol Dragway, Brandon Cross, the next racetrack on the tour, to find out what's going to be going on for all you WFO radio listeners that are going to be out there, and all you people who have yet to buy your tickets, if you're within like a 4-hour, 5-hour drive, and I know that that's a lot of people, you should make the plans to come out and see us. If not one day, all the days. And if not all the days, then one day or 2 days. Whatever you can do. Come out and hang with us out there at Bristol Dragway. We'll be back with the Bristol Dragway director, Brandon Cross, with us here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
On Valentine's Day, he took his wife to that expensive, fancy restaurant. On Halloween, he took the kids around the neighborhood to ask strangers for candy. So this Father's Day weekend, let's do what Dad wants to do. Go to the drag races. The Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals, June 13 to 15 at Bristol Dragway. 10,000 horsepower, 300 miles an hour, and nitro pumping power that'll make your bones rattle. See drag racing's biggest stars like John Force and his daughters Courtney and Brittany make this the best Father's Day ever. Start a new Father's Day weekend tradition at the Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals. Tickets start at just $20, $79 for the entire weekend. Plus, save on tickets and get your kids' tickets free if you order before June 7th. Just call 423-BRISTOL or go online to ThunderValleyTix.com.
Red Line Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials, known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine, published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
And finally this week on WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro, we're going to check in with our great friends over at Bristol Dragway, the next stop on the Mellow Yellow Series Tour. You know, we've been encouraging WFO Radio listeners to get out there and hang with us on Father's Day weekend. Well, joining us now, he's the director of Bristol Dragway, Brandon Cross, to tell us more about what's going to be going on. Brandon, welcome back to WFO. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, very thrilled to connect with you guys, and I will be there at Bristol as part of the NHRA track announcing team, so I am very excited. And from what I understand, a lot of our listeners are going to be showing up to another great event. You guys always know how to do it right.
We do. I mean, we're so excited about the Ford NHRA Thunder Valley Nationals being June 13th through the 15th, coming up so quick here. We're just, you know, one of the great things is just having the event on Father's Day weekend. I mean, there's no better holiday weekend time to just, you know, come out with the family, start your own Nitro generation with Dad or just the family and the kids. It's just a great, great event to come out as a family.
Now, there's a lot going on. I got a call from one of my friends who is one of your local racers up there, and their daughter is going to be a part of the Junior Dragster program. And NHRA just made a huge announcement at Englishtown that children beginning at 5 years old are going to be able to race junior dragsters, of course not at national events and not side-by-side just yet. But I hear you guys have got a great junior dragster program. You've got a great bracket program. And this track is really kind of the epicenter of local racing in that area.
It is. I mean, all of our programs, our weekly programs, our special events, it's amazing the growth that we've had over the last 4 or 5 years. And you're right. I mean, just the junior program, the way it's grown. We even host the Eastern Conference Finals, which is, you know, the world's largest junior dragster race, where we'll host over 600 racers for about 8 straight days. But, you know, that continues on through all of our events, especially for the NHRA events as well. Just the popularity continues to grow. It's something we're excited about. We know that fans just love the full experience of NHRA at Bristol.
Not unlike Charlotte, NASCAR country with a big NASCAR track right next door on the property, the world's fastest half mile. But a little longer history of drag racing in the Bristol area than in Charlotte, at least with the current facility. This has been here a long time. Bruton Smith did a lot to improve it. Jeff Bird, of course, overseeing all of it. This track has a very rich history.
It's awesome, and I'm just amazed as fans bring pictures of when they used to attend races here in the 60s or even raced here in the 60s. And what's really cool, too, is talking to so many people and how many of them still call it the Spring Nationals. Which was the name for many, many years. You're right, the history here between the racing, the way this place grew, the different organizations that have came through Bristol, the history is unlike any other facility. And what it's grown into, not only the events that we have here now, but just what a cool facility that we have and the character it has where, you know, where it's Thunder Valley, where we actually are sitting between two mountains, and how the noise echoes through the valley as these Top Fuel and Funny Car machines make their passes. It's, you know, it's a cool experience that you really can't, you know, feel, hear, or see like any other drag strip.
Brandon Cross with us. He's the director of Bristol Dragway, and we'll be heading there. That is the next stop on the NHRA Mellow Yellow Series Tour after an off weekend. And, Brandon, I understand we're coming up on some ticketing deadlines. That's why I'm grateful to have you here on the show to talk about it. Tell us about some of the things that are going on for maybe there's some listeners that are in the area, driving distance. They're considering coming down. Let's push them over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, every day has a special feature. Of course, all weekend we'll have the great racing going on the track and the great accessibility in the pits to get up close to these racing machines and the drivers. But, you know, Friday's a great day with qualifying underneath the lights. After the show's over, we do a great fireworks show. Saturday, of course, you get to be there and see who the number one qualifier is and to see how the fields are going to get set. After the racing's completed on Saturday, we do a fan fest, which is really grown, something we've done the last 4 or 5 years. I think we've got about 30 drivers committed to stick around and do autographs to the fans. And, of course, Sunday, obviously, eliminations. It's Father's Day, just a very special day, a chance to, before the racing starts, to get out on the track, walk the track that they're getting ready to take these awesome machines down, and then, of course, stick around to see who wins the event. And you're right, we do have some deadlines coming up. Right now, if you get your tickets before June 7th, you're going to save on your tickets. You're going to save money on it. And also it gives you a chance to get free tickets on Sunday, which is obviously that Father's Day. I mean, what a special day. We've seen the families and the dads and the kids come out strong on Sunday. So tickets are going fast. Sales are doing really good. You can find tickets at thundervalleytickets.com, or you can call our ticket office at 423-BRISTOL.
That is absolutely awesome. The Father's Day aspect of it, your commercials are really cool. We've been airing them now for several weeks, and I really like the attitude that goes along with them. The whole idea that, you know, bring Dad out to the track. Dad doesn't want a tie. Dad doesn't want a new razor. Dad wants to come out to the drag races, and it sounds like you're talking about my dad.
Yeah, I mean, we all struggle. I know I do, trying to find that perfect, you know, gift for our dads. And Father's Day is a very special holiday, and you always want to do something for your dad. And it is hard to find that right gift. He probably already has everything he needs, or it's hard to find something he'd get really excited about. And this is one of those gifts or one of those opportunities to do something really special. And I mean, because it's such a great event, with just the way where you get to see and hear and smell these race cars go down the track and walk over to the pits and meet the drivers and see them rebuilding these machines. It's just it's an experience that, you know, you and your dad are never going to forget.
Isn't that the ultimate fact? As much as we love the cars, Brandon, and the performances, and I want to ask you your thoughts on what we've seen to the season so far, but you can buy something, an object, but chances are in 2 years it will be gone or broken or inadequate or insufficient, technology will have passed it by, whatever it is. But the experience of walking up and down Nitro Alley, hanging out with your dad, whether you're a son, daughter, husband, or wife, or otherwise, you know, the wives can bring the husbands and call it Father's Day. It's a big, big deal. Those things really last forever, not just in the mind of the father, but everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And we hear those stories every year, you know, as I'm out walking around talking to fans, you know, we meet new people every year. And it's, you know, it's a family that decided to bring Dad out and talking about what a good time they've had, how, you know, there's something for everybody. So it's just it's something that you actually will remember forever, especially your very first one, because I promise you, you've never seen anything like it.
Isn't that the truth? The experience of feeling Nitro cars for the very first time, it's one that stays with you, and that's how people end up coming back year after year. What are your thoughts on the season so far? We have seen so much already. Courtney Force with that 100th win for women, but now Richie Crampton becomes the 100th Top Fuel winner in NHRA history. Cruz Pedregon, the quickest run in the history of Nitro Funny Cars this past weekend at E-Town. Erica Enders-Stevens, the quickest pro stock run ever, and obviously got the quickest hot rod out there in the pro stock pit area. There is so much going on. The Harley Davidson's not going to be there at your event, but they are running very well. What is standing out in your mind right now, Brandon?
Well, what always amazes me is just how things continue to be so diverse. you know, with the women being so strong this year, the 100th win, of course, that's a huge milestone. I mean, it's just amazing. It seems like every weekend there's a new story, you know, somebody coming up through the ranks, somebody that's making some big noise that, you know, maybe you thought they were a year or two away from doing that. Of course, there's some good headlines here. You know, will John Force repeat from last year? Will the hometown favorite, Alan Johnson in pro stock, you know, will he be able to pull off that big victory in Bristol that he's been after for so long? It's an amazing year so far, and I know it's only going to get better as the points get tighter down to the championship.
And Bristol Dragway is a big part of it. The Ford Thunder Valley Nationals coming up next weekend. We will be there, and it is going to be a lot of fun. Brandon, give that ticket information one more time. WFO audience, if you're in the area, share it, retweet it, tweet it, do the deal, because the WFO audience and listeners, we're going to be out there in force. Give that info one more time.
Yep, ticket information you can find at thundervalleyticks.com, or you can call 423-BRISTOL.
And should they ask for you? Let me talk to Brandon.
We lost. I'm sorry, say that again.
Should they ask for you personally? Like, hey, let me talk to Brandon. Obviously, I'm
kidding. Well, sure, they absolutely can, or you can talk to any of our ticket representatives.
I'm just teasing you. I don't want to take you off task. I know you got a million things. Seriously, that is an interesting question, because I got to watch David Knapp run around Englishtown this past weekend and just put out fires. The idea of having thousands of people come to your facility, keeping it organized, keeping everything going, that is a big, big job you guys have.
It's a lot, but it's something we're used to doing. You know, our overall mission is to make everybody happy, and we're willing to do anything and everything we can to accomplish that. So we set high standards here for all of our staffing, and you know, we're able to do that and set the bar for other facilities. And it's something we're proud of, and it's something we'll continue to do.
Brandon, I want to thank you for coming on WFO Radio, telling us a little bit more about it. I am excited to be headed out there to Bristol Dragway in 2 weeks, next weekend, for the Ford Thunder Valley Nationals. And thank you so much for coming on WFO Radio to tell us more about it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brandon. Brandon Cross, director of Bristol Dragway, with us here on WFO Radio. And I'm very much looking forward to hitting Bristol, and then hitting Epping, and then hitting Chicago, and then hitting all of them, baby. It's going to be awesome. But Bristol comes on WFO and advertises to the WFO Radio audience. So if you're going to go to one, obviously, I think that Bristol is the one you should go to. And come hang out with me, baby. Come out, hang out with me. I will be there. We always get together with the listeners. I got my cool tie-dye shirt. I went down there, though, and made some other purchases as well. $10 T-shirts at the Englishtown Raceway Park. What I could stuff in the old suitcase, which is very, very cool. But what a good time it was. I really like getting up there. We had a good time. But I've got something else going. You know, I mentioned earlier I mocked the whole social media culture, because it is silly when you hear the radio hosts talking about tweets that they did 3 days ago. Well, you know, I tweeted a picture of my hand, and we're all doing it because we're still captured by the idea of Twitter. But when you do a show, like, the thought is that you would tweet about what's on the show, not talk on the show about what you tweeted about. But I guess it goes back and forth. But what I have done is we have created a group on Facebook. And for a long time, I did not really know what the point was. Actually, when I made the group at first, it was a mistake. I was trying to make a page, and I blew it, and I created a group. But then there was this group, and the group has like 200-something members, called WFO Radio. And I'll throw out a casual question every once in a while. But I finally figured out what to use this thing for, this WFO group, because people are into it. Hey, group, please explain how you listen to WFO, what apps, RSS, desktop, etc. And Ryan Pebble says the app, and Dave Wurzel says the app, and Rich and Saga says podcasts on his iPod, and sometimes the app on my Android. This guy's got both, so he's using the traditional podcast means. And Amy, who made us the T-shirts, is listening on her app on iPhone. Sam uses the iPad. Mike Williams is on Android. You know, you Droid people, Stitcher and TuneIn, I want your experience to be great. And we do have an Android app for WFO Radio. But I will be honest, because I want your experience to be great. Fast-forwarding and rewinding and picking up the speed. That is something that a lot of these podcast apps do. And the show is what we want you listening to. The app is just a way to access it. Marvin Rodak uses the PC and Android. Kevin uses the podcast catcher on iPhone. And every now and again, a PC. So we're getting a good idea. This guy, Sean, uses the Pocket Cast on his Android. It's a paid app, but I really like the interface, says he. He uses Stitcher. It's his second favorite. Pocket Cast. Hadn't heard of that one. Graham uses the Apple iPhone app. He's on the Trans-Canada Highway. And Rich is by the fire on an old-time wooden radio. That's Rich York on the Ignition Show, one of our characters. Craig in Seattle uses the Android app or the WFO webpage. Whatever phone you have, the app is easy to download and it's free. Yes. Mattman uses Beyond Pod. See, it's very dramatic sounding. Beyond Pod. It's on Android. It has 1.5 times playback speed. And it helps keep down the backlog because, you know, podcasts take up space on your phone. And we don't want you to take forever listening. Bobby Graham uses the iPhone app. Or he listens in the browser. If it gives him trouble, he goes to Stitcher and listens there. Or clicking the links on Twitter. That's another way. If you click the link on Twitter, it'll play in your browser. Brian has an Android, but sometimes he goes to the website. Fernando just goes to the archive page on the website. How cool is that? And Bob uses the iOS app. See, now that is what I'm going to use the WFO group for. Market research. So do you want to be part of the market research team? Do you want to give us feedback and opinions that we can actually use here on WFO Radio? How about that? I'm going to do one right now while we're on the air. Let's see. Who? This is right off the top of my head. Should we have on WFO Radio as our next non-winners edition guest? Question mark. See, how about that? This is live stuff here, Big Daddy. Who should we have on WFO Radio as our next non-winners edition guest? And let's see what you say. We'll put that in the group. Obviously, you have to request being a member of the group, which I will, of course, allow you to be a member of the group. And then I can do all kinds of market research with you and find out the best way to serve our sponsors, like Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, frankhawley.com, and Rodak's Coffee and Barbecue, grills.com, which is cool. Check out the WFO page, and obviously Bristol Dragway on board, and Renlight Oil has been helping us throughout the years. These are big things, and it will help the show to grow. And really, that is our greatest challenge. If you are a new listener and you say, hey, this is cool, the best thing you can do is to tell somebody about it. We have seen our numbers increase, but we're looking for that big explosion where a large percentage of NHRA Mellow Yellow Series drag racing fans jump on board with us. So check it out. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Andrew Hines and Jed Coughlin and Cruz Pedregon and Richie Crampton and, of course, Alan Reinhardt, who starts off every show. We have definitely had a good run. It's about to get great because I am going to be out there on the tour for these next foreseeable future. I will be in Bristol. I will be in Epping. I will be in Chicago. I will not be in Norwalk. I will be in Denver. And then I'll have a little bit of a break. So come out and see me out there at the NHRA. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you next time. Don't forget the Ignition Show tomorrow. I love converting NHRA listeners to Ignition listeners because it's a NASCAR show. I have now picked the winner 2 weeks in a row. There will be gloating. It's more of a sports talk, morning show style attitude where we happen to be talking about racing. But don't expect hard stats or anything like that. It's light entertainment. Very light, casual entertainment. Whereas this show is a magazine show with interviews. That is light natured entertainment. Hopefully you like it. Click the WFO Radio Ignition button and try it out or get it on Stitcher or our app. There you go. Again, thanks to all of our guests, everyone who helps out behind the scene, Patrick the webmaster, Matt Mann who posts on our Facebook page, and everybody behind the scenes who has helped out. That's going to do it. We'll see you next time right here on WFO. Carlos Hawkins stuff, who is in the other room working on something right now. Just wanted to drop him in. I realize he probably hears me. That's the real dude. He's right across the wall. He probably hears me. I know you're listening. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you next time right here on WFO Radio.
WFO!
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.
I love WFO Radio.